Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Would you be more willing to go to a restaurant if you knew everyone working there had been vaccinated against COVID-19? Jason Berry hopes so. He's founder of Need Hospitality and Design in Washington, D.C. The restaurant company is planning to pay its workers to get vaccinated. Berry is joining other companies like Dollar General, McDonald's, Trader Joe's, and the Olive Garden by compensating workers to get a shot. Jason Berry, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And what's the plan? How are you going to make this work for your employees?
Well, we wanted to have an opportunity to encourage everybody to get vaccinated. And I think the restaurant industry employees are a unique group because they're generally very young. They feel that they're going to live forever, as many young people do, and don't always have health insurance and don't always take good care of themselves. And so given that the virus has not focused on young people as much as older people and people with pre-existing conditions, we had to find a way to encourage our teammates to take better care of themselves. And so we came up with a plan to incentivize them to get vaccinated. And the plan is pretty simple. If you are an hourly employee, you're going to receive 4 hours of extra pay at your regular wage rate. And if you're a salaried employee, we're going to give you an extra day of paid vacation.
And help me do the math here just a little bit. So what kind of dollar figure does that look like for a typical hourly employee?
Minimum wage here is $15 an hour. The majority of our employees are tipped employees, so they receive minimum wage. We have about 300 employees, 320 employees right now. And I don't have a calculator in front of me, but my guess is right around, you know, $20,000. Plus the salaried employees adds a whole lot more. We have about 30 of those.
Hmm. So who's eligible? Is it everyone from your office workers to the bus staff and bartenders, everybody?
Any employee, yep, absolutely.
All right. So the other question is, when are they going to be eligible to get these shots? Because right now, not all frontline workers can get in line.
Well, we were supposed to be eligible February 1st. Of course, vaccines are pretty delayed, unfortunately. And hospitality is one of the essential groups, but not obviously at the top of the list.
Okay, so that's got to happen first before any of this can happen. But, you know, there are
absolutely
two reasons that I can think of doing something like this. Number one, it's probably good business for you. And number two, it's probably just the ethical, the right thing to do. How did you make the decision here to do this?
Well, definitely the latter was number one. It's the right thing to do for our teammates, given the concerns we have. And this is really one of the only businesses that I can think of where you're exposed to people with their mask off. You have to take your mask off to eat. And our staff, you know, stays away from the tables as much as possible, but they have to visit the tables to bring them food and drink. And so that was really important to us to find a way to help protect our teammates. And secondly, you're right, it is good business. And I'm hoping that sharing what we're doing, what some other companies are doing, that we can encourage others in our industry to get their teammates vaccinated. I think that we need to find a way to communicate to the public that it's safe to eat in restaurants. And one of the ways we can do that is by sharing that our teammates are vaccinated. And, you know, just like the health department in many cities will put a letter grade in your window, perhaps there's a way to say this restaurant is 96% staff vaccinated or something along those lines to encourage people to enter our restaurant and feel safe that they can eat there.
Is part of the issue that you're trying to overcome vaccine hesitancy on your staff? Have you heard of that? Do you think this would help?
You know, I haven't heard directly from any of our staff that they're vaccine hesitant. I'm sure there are some when you have a population of, you know, 320. But yes, we feel that as the leaders of the company, if we believe in vaccines and we believe in science and health, hopefully they'll follow our lead if they're wishy-washy on what to do and take the vaccines when they're offered to them.
And have you had any outbreaks of COVID since the pandemic started inside your restaurants?
No outbreaks. In fact, not one contact tracing event since we reopened our restaurants in early June has occurred in any of our restaurants. And I'm really proud of that. We've had people that have had to, you know, take time off because they may have caught COVID from some other place, but no contracted cases in the restaurants that we're aware of.
You know, Jason, for a year now, almost, I've been speaking with restaurant owners who've just taken a huge, huge hit financially, emotionally. Some are barely hanging on. Some have closed. But it's interesting because you appear to be doing quite well, and I see that you're opening several more restaurants this year. How are you able to pull that off at this time?
Well, we've got great investors. We've got great brokers who help us find locations, and we have a good reputation. You know, I thought on March 16th last year when all of my restaurants were closed, I thought my career was over and I have to go find a new job. It wasn't quite that simple, but it was one of the most emotional days I've had in my life. Once the dust settled a little bit and the government helped with the PPP immensely, the SBA helped with loans, and our landlords have been really good. We're fortunate enough to have big waterfront restaurants with a lot of patio space, and our landlords gave us more space to use so that we could get more tables outside. So there have been a few silver linings to this terrible cloud over our industry, but we're just happy to have our employees employed and our restaurants exist, and we know that we're going to come back from this hopefully this spring or summer as the world starts to settle post-vaccine and come out of this pandemic.
Jason Berry, founder of Need Hospitality and Design. It's a Washington, D.C. restaurant company that will pay its workers to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Jason, thank you very much for speaking with us, and best of luck to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
What does diversity in the upper ranks of an NFL franchise look like? Well, after last night, it looks like a Super Bowl win. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a more diverse coaching staff than almost any other team in the NFL. 4 black coordinators, 2 women coaches, and that's very unusual for pro football. Coaches are overwhelmingly white and male, while 70% of the players are black. Rod Graves is executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance Foundation, which works to advance diversity in pro football. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ari. Thanks for having me on today.
How different does the Tampa staff look from other teams?
Well, quite a bit different. And a lot of credit goes to, obviously, Bruce Arians and the intention that he has had throughout his career to make diversity a priority. And I think we saw the evidence of what bringing along a diverse staff can do for an organization and particularly for a football team. So I commend them for taking the steps to do it and succeeding in the process.
Of course, Bruce Arians is the head coach in Tampa. How much work does it take? I mean, how deliberate and intentional did they have to be in hiring up a diverse staff?
Well, if you ask Bruce Arians, he'll simply say he just hired the best people for the job. And I think it's really just as easy as that. You know, diversity comes in all shapes and forms. And all people who are concerned about the issue are asking is that they be given a chance for a fair, open, and competitive process to being hired. And when given that process, we find that diverse candidates can rise to the occasion. They can fit the job responsibilities and provide the leadership and vision that teams are looking for.
So explain why Tampa is such an outlier. I mean, 4 teams, Tampa, Arizona, Cleveland, and Las Vegas, are responsible for about a third of all the black and brown coaches and GMs hired in the last 30 years. How does something like that happen?
Well, it is a great question, Ari. And in my opinion, it's part of the issue surrounding the National Football League today. The league has been around for over 100 years. It's a billion-dollar business. And yet we've got the stain of this problem staring us in the face year after year. And I think it's basically a result of there being a lack of focus and priority from owners on this particular topic.
Are there still people in power who believe that a diverse leadership team is going to disadvantage a franchise? And if so, is Tampa's Super Bowl win last night likely to change their thinking?
The victory last night should give teams and owners in particular something to think about with respect to how they structured their leadership teams and really look into not only what happens on the football field, Ari, but what happens on the business side. Most of our corporate portraits, particularly when you're talking about NFL teams, don't have much color in them. That certainly needs to be looked at today, given the fact that there are a lot of powerful representatives, executives out there who are capable of filling in leadership roles.
Rod Graves is executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance Foundation. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Ari.
Democrats are moving forward on President Biden's $1.9 trillion proposed stimulus package as the United States faces a staggering economic crisis. They plan to use the budget reconciliation process to pass the bill, despite Republican opposition allowing the legislation to take effect before March 14th, when key unemployment programs expire. There are still some hurdles to be worked out. Biden has said he's open to negotiating eligibility for receiving $1,400 direct payments included in the bill. But on Saturday, Senator Bernie Sanders, the new chair of the Senate Budget Committee, tweeted his opposition to cutting the income threshold, writing, quote, unbelievable. There are some Dems who want to lower the income eligibility for direct payments from $75,000 to $50,000 for individuals and $150,000 to $100,000 for couples. In other words, working class people who got checks from Trump would not get them from Biden. Brilliant, unquote. Senator Sanders elaborated Sunday on CNN's State of the Union.
What we have done in the past and what we have promised the American people, we've said two things in the last month. We said we're going to get you $2,000, and that's $600 plus $1,400. And what we're going to do is say that everybody, a single person, individual, $75,000 or lower, and a couple of $150,000 or lower will be eligible for that full $2,000, $600 plus $1,400. Now, when people said, we don't want rich people to get that benefit, I understand that. I agree. And what we need to do is have a strong cliff so it doesn't kind of spill over to people making $300,000.
This comes as billionaires' wealth in the United States grew by almost 40% during the pandemic, increasing by more than $1.1 trillion. Biden's stimulus bill is also set to include a $400 per week jobless benefit through September and $30 billion for rent and utility assistance. This comes as data shows women lost about 5.5 million jobs over the course of the first 10 months of the pandemic, nearly 1 million more jobs lost than men. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen spoke about the staggering number of women who've left the workforce since the pandemic began when she appeared Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation.
The American Rescue Package that President Biden has proposed really addresses the problems that women face. It places huge emphasis on getting our schools open safely, getting children back into school, providing paid family and medical leave during this crisis so that women don't have to leave their jobs when they're faced with health issues or family issues that they have to address. There's emphasis on providing more child care and payments, tax credits expanded for children to help families address these needs. And I think this is really necessary to get women back to work. They've faced a disproportionate burden because of this crisis, especially low-wage women and women of color.
Women of color are especially hard hit by job losses during the pandemic, with Black, Latinx, and Asian women accounting for all of women's job losses in December. Combined with women's increased responsibility for caregiving at home, it's a trend that could set women back decades and prompted our next guest to call this the first ever She Session. C. Nicole Mason is the president and chief executive officer of the Institute for Women's Policy Research, a leading voice on pay equity, economic policies, and research impacting women. She's quoted in a section of the New York Times that came out on Sunday. The whole section, America's Mothers Are in Crisis, is anyone listening to them? C. Nicole Mason, thanks so much for being with us. Can you talk about what this economic crisis means for women, what a She Session, your term, is?
So this is a historic moment. We have not witnessed a moment like this ever in U.S. history. So the C session is about making sure that we understand that women have been disproportionately impacted by job and income losses during the pandemic and during this economic downturn. And the reason for this is that is because women are overrepresented in the hardest hit sectors. Service, leisure, hospitality, education, and healthcare services have been hit hardest during this downturn, disproportionately impacting, again, low-wage workers and women of color.
So talk about why women are so hard hit right now and how in this country this is really being overlooked, certainly not by the women themselves who are being crushed, losing their jobs, having to care for parents, having to care for children, what this means, setting women back decades.
So what this means is, so the reason why women, like I said, are disproportionately impacted is because they're overrepresented in hardest hit sectors. And when jobs, when stay-at-home orders were implemented, businesses closed down, and that disproportionately impacted women. And then also schools and daycares closed down. So women had this real, had this dual burden of providing for their families and earning a living, but also caretaking responsibilities. So in the beginning, I don't really believe that we really took it seriously in terms of the impact of school closures on working women. But we saw, for example, in August, 865,000 women fell out of the workforce. And people asked me, they said, well, you know, why do you think that is? I said, it's a no-brainer. Schools were supposed to open in August and September, and they did it, and women had to make some tough choices.
You wrote in a recent piece, at the first of the year, we celebrated women's economic gains when they made up a little more than 50% of the workforce. The pandemic has all but wiped out those gains and made it more difficult for women to re-enter the workforce and sustain employment.
Mm-hmm.
Explain.
So again, and at the beginning of the year in 2020, in January, we were celebrating this milestone, and then the pandemic hit, and more than 2 million women fell out of the workforce four times the rate than men. In 2008, when the economic recession hit, it mainly impacted manufacturing production and construction, again, disproportionately impacting men. So, but this time around, not only were women losing jobs at a clip, they were also managing virtual learning with their children. And women were told during this time, and when, you know, like, oh, you'll figure it out. Oh, it's not that big a deal. And we, in terms of reopening and stay-at-home orders, we put a lot of focus on small businesses, which I think is right. But there was very little attention paid to getting schools open. And so that has had a disproportionate impact on women because without schools and daycares and the pandemic under control, they will continue and have continued to fall out of the workforce.
So as this debate on the $1.9 trillion COVID crisis, economic crisis package takes place, what is missing? What do you think needs to happen, particularly to protect women?
So there are a lot of good things in that package. So you heard Janet Yellen talking about all the good things in there or smart things in there for women. You know, the expanded unemployment insurance, the housing and food assistance money's in there, paid family and sick leave. All these things will go a long way towards ensuring women who cannot reenter the workforce because of caretaking responsibilities or simply can't find a job because many women have been unemployed for 27 weeks or more, that they have a lifeline. So that's really important. And I think the second part of the stimulus package, which we'll see, I think, in the coming weeks and months, is job creation. So there'll be a concerted effort on job creation. And oftentimes, like in 2008, there was a concerted effort around infrastructure, you know, production, manufacturing, getting people back to work. This time around, we're going to need to focus on those hardest hit sectors where women have been most affected and impacted, and then also dedicate some funds to education and training. Because, you know, to be honest, Amy, some of those jobs that we lost are not going to be able to come back. And so women will have to enter new sectors altogether.
And what about the $15 minimum wage increase that was included in Biden's stimulus bill proposal? Some say it cannot be included if Democrats want to use the reconciliation process to pass it, because that rule can only be used for bills concerning spending, taxes and debt. But Senator Bernie Sanders, chair of the Budget Committee, argued that it does comply with the budget reconciliation process. Can you comment?
So the $15 minimum wage is long overdue. Raising the minimum wage is long overdue. And right now, I don't want to choose political expediency over what, you know, the right thing to do. But I will say, Amy, that raising the minimum wage to $15 is only a small part of this deal here. We also need to make sure that these jobs are quality jobs, because what the most devastating thing during the pandemic is that even when women lost their jobs, they also didn't have paid sick leave. They didn't have other benefits that we know make the difference for working families. And so in addition to the $15 an hour, we also need to make sure that they have paid and family sick leave and also have better job security and flexibility. All these things were critical issues during the pandemic and for working women.
See, Nicole Mason, I want to thank you so much for being with us, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. She coined the term "she session."
It's worth comparing how Congress reacted to the insurrection at the Capitol with how corporate America reacted. So the Senate acquitted Donald Trump this weekend on an impeachment charge. But American companies sued, they suspended contracts, and they stopped donations to politicians who spread false claims of election fraud. Are companies doing a better job of holding our elected officials accountable than our elected officials are? Last week, our guest host, Sasha Pfeiffer, talked to Professor Luigi Zingales. He teaches about capitalism at the University of Chicago.
I want to reel off some of the ways that the corporate hammer has been coming down recently. We saw Dominion and Smartmatic sue former President Trump's allies for lying about their voting machines. We saw companies including American Express and Morgan Stanley suspending their donations to key Republican lawmakers. The PGA pulled its tournament from a Trump golf resort. I see this happen, and it makes me think that the corporate response to political controversy has been more nimble and possibly more effective than the government one. Effective if you disagree with what these politicians were doing. Am I fair to view it that way?
I think you are fair, but I will distinguish very much between actions that are in the interest of the corporation themselves, in the financial interest, and actions that are not necessarily in financial interest. So take, for example, Dominion suing Fox for misinformation. That's an action that they don't take because they're Democrat or Republican. They take to preserve their reputation, their money.
Even if some of these companies are motivated to do this by profit, they've still been effective in the sense that they have changed behavior. Can capitalism accomplish something that government doesn't seem to be able to?
Certainly, capitalism, which at the end of the day is freedom of choice, can have a gigantic impact on the way even we run the government and the way we distribute information and so on and so forth. And when it comes to that tension, the profit motive is a very good one.
In some ways, if you like the decisions that corporate America has made, because you tend to be more left-leaning and you're happy with those decisions, then you're seeing the benefits of a capitalist society.
That's certainly true, but I think a fundamental principle is you have to invert the situation and see whether you still like it. So if in this moment corporations were to help Republicans, will you still like it or not?
Do you think it's ever the case that companies make these decisions truly out of principle or ethics or altruism, or is there always a profit motive involved?
I think most of the time is a profit motive. Sometimes it's even worse, is the motive to appease who is in power at the moment. I think it's scary to me that all these companies found out about the lies of Donald Trump or about not donating after Donald Trump lost the election and just before they weren't as vocal or as aggressive. So I want to see to what extent the same companies are standing up to the Biden administration if the Biden administration were to do something wrong. But there are certainly cases where people do out of principle. I think that I read at least of the CEO of Dick's Sporting Goods that decided not to sell assault rifles in his stores, even if he knew that this was costly from a profit bottom line. But he just did not want to have the moral responsibility of being part of a mass shooting.
Do you think that these actions by some companies to say enough is enough is going to be a lasting effect, or could they just simply go back to the way it was in a few months once the politics of the day calm down?
My hope is that this will become a conversation at shareholders' meeting, because I'm concerned that the person who plays the role of CEO has a disproportionate power. And I would like this decision to be made not in the boardroom, but at the shareholders' meeting and the employees' meetings, because those are the key stakeholders that should voice their preferences. Because I consider a fundamental freedom, the freedom not to work, invest, or even buy from a company you don't agree with.
Professor Luigi Zingales of the University of Chicago, thank you for talking with us about this.
My pleasure.
And the other kids got McDonald's. They outside going, we got McDonald's, hamburgers, McDonald's, McDonald's. I got McDonald's.
Business news next. And for that, Stephen Carroll joins me here in the studio. Hello, Stephen. So good to see you. We're starting over in the United States. New York State is suing Amazon over conditions for its workers. Tell us more.
The e-commerce giant is accused of not doing enough to protect its workers from COVID-19. That includes claims the company failed to follow state rules on cleaning and disinfection at its facilities. Amazon says the complaint doesn't present an accurate picture of what it calls its industry-leading response to the pandemic. New York Attorney General has begun an investigation into the company following the firing of an employee who'd been part of a walkout at Amazon's Staten Island depot last year. Workers had been protesting over the safety measures put in place there.
Staying in the U.S. for this next story, Stephen, McDonald's, another American giant, is being sued for racial discrimination by one of its franchise owners.
This is a man called Herb Washington, who says the company has denied black franchise owners the same opportunities as white owners, pushing them towards locations in poorer areas. He says this is driving away black franchise owners from the brand. The company has denied the allegations, saying Mr. Washington has mismanaged his business. Yinka Oyatade has the story.
Herb Washington was once McDonald's largest black franchise owner in the United States. Now he's suing the fast food giants for racial discrimination, claiming the company pushes owners like him to poorer areas where they make less profit. The allegations follow a rapid fall in the number of black franchisees.
We had over close to 400 McDonald's owner operators at one point. Today we have about 186, 187. The cash flow differential in different parts of the state can be hundreds of thousands of dollars per store, less than their white counterparts.
Herb Washington once owned an empire of 27 McDonald's restaurants. Today he has just 14. He says he was pressured to sell several of his stores to white owners, letting go of 7 restaurants in the last 3 years alone. McDonald's denies the allegations. They argue that Washington is wholly responsible for his decline.
This situation is the result of years of mismanagement by Mr. Washington, whose organization has failed to meet many of our standards on people, operations, guest satisfaction and reinvestment.
The fast food giant says they've invested significantly in Washington's stores. But the 69-year-old disagrees. He argues the company's help has done little to narrow the gap between his earnings and those of his white counterparts. Washington isn't alone in his claims. This lawsuit comes just months after 52 other black McDonald's owners took the fast food giant to court over the same issue.
The CDC says vaccine hesitancy is dropping. That means fewer people are saying they won't take the vaccine. And yet, some people still won't, including some you might not expect. Dr. Asif Merchant works in a cluster of 4 nursing homes outside of Boston. He's also an advisor to the Massachusetts governor. And he told me that some of his nursing home colleagues who have seen so much at this point are still hesitant to take a vaccine.
It was hard. I mean, you know, we were still trying to understand the disease, the transmission, what the best practices are. This was all new. And it was almost a learning to fly in the middle of a flight or building a plane in the middle of a flight. It was extremely difficult. Patients were falling sick. Staff was calling out. Some staff was sick. And then, you know, you had almost a perfect storm where there were very few staff members taking care of multiple sick residents. And because it was so busy with such poor staffing levels, it was extremely difficult. And it was, you know, a very painful sight.
Did you lose patients, Dr. Merchant?
Yes, unfortunately, I lost a lot of patients during the last year. And it was heartbreaking because you would see somebody who was sick and we wouldn't get results in time. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, testing was done only if somebody was symptomatic. And many of these residents were not symptomatic initially, but then they suddenly, when they got symptomatic, it was a sudden crash, almost like falling off the edge of a cliff.
You've been a doctor for many years. You've obviously lost patients before throughout your career. How different was COVID, though?
Being a geriatrician, working with the elderly, I see a lot of death, but this was, you know, four or five times of that. It was at such a rapid pace, you know, you didn't have time to sit and think. If I just sat and thought about it, I would have broken down. It was that bad.
And then as we headed into the winter, we learned, all of us basically at the same time, that vaccines were being approved. You had some colleagues then who wanted to get the vaccine, but you have also written publicly that you had many colleagues who did not want to get the vaccine, which seems surprising to me. What was happening?
It is surprising, but not really, because, you know, in early 2020, the whole COVID pandemic was very political in many ways about different treatments, you know, drugs that were not really studied for it being pushed by certain politicians and talking about vaccines before the election in November. And it almost seemed like, you know, scientists are being strong-armed into, you know, getting something out and available to the public. And it created a lot of mistrust. I was skeptical at one point because, you know, no other vaccine has been developed this quickly in the history of modern medicine. It seemed, you know, rough estimates, it would take, you know, at least a couple of years before we got a successful vaccine. Now, couple that with the political jargon and verbiage that was spread that we'll have a vaccine before the election, it seemed like more of a political stunt than real science. And I think that was, you know, why I was skeptical.
When you had conversations with your colleagues and you spoke to people who said, I'm not going to take this thing, what were some of the reasons that they gave?
There were a lot of reasons, and a lot of it could be boiled down to mistrust. They didn't really trust, you know, the science behind it. They didn't trust, you know, the politicians and government, you know, who works in nursing homes and who are the CNAs and nurses. You know, in Massachusetts, at least, we see a large amount of Haitian Creole-speaking co-workers that I have, or Blacks and Africans who work as CNAs or nurses. And they have an inbuilt mistrust of the system due to historic reasons. Also, they were concerned about how can a vaccine be developed this quickly when there is no cure for many of the other illnesses, certain cancers, even influenza. The influenza vaccine is not very effective every year when they take it. So there's a lot of historical perspective to some of their concerns.
At the end of the day, do you believe that you're convincing people that the vaccine is safe?
I certainly think I have made a difference.
Dr. Merchant, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Asif Merchant specializes in geriatric medicine and teaches at Tufts. He also works in a nursing home community outside of Boston.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, February 19th. 2021, so I have been told. This is our weekly forum on neutralizing workplace racism. Hopefully, we can share counter-racist logic, suggestions to help victims of racism solve problems in the workplace without creating new problems. The number to dial, 720-716-7300. The code, 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. This broadcast, not for spectators. If you have figured out some things that work well with regards to so many different topics, with regards to the COVID-19 situation and staying safe in the workplace, navigating the vaccine situation, either way, if you, you know, want to take it, if you don't want to take it, just, you know, whatever you think is the best procedure for being safe in the workplace. If you figured out some things that work well there, share. If you figured out some things to neutralize racist attacks in the workplace, share. If you figured out some things that are helpful in getting a raise or promotion, that is always helpful. Certainly, we're always open to folks if you have problems and would appreciate feedback, suggestions. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let's see here. So many things to get to. Number one, the first clip that we started with. If your employer were to in some way incentivize the vaccine, I think there had been grumblings or reports that in some places, you know, it might be a requirement, or could you lose your job? That type of speculation, you know, could you get in trouble in the workplace if you, you know, decide you don't want a vaccine? What about the other way? They say the carrot and the stick. If your job said, hey, like we heard in the report, we will give you 4 hours of whatever your normal wage is. If you get the vaccine, if you are salary, you will get an extra day of vacation. If there was some sort of compensation for workers getting the vaccine, would that change your opinion about all of this? Personally, I was doing the math. I think they said you get 4 hours. So they were saying, like, if you're a minimum wage employee for their area, that was $15. So that's $60, I would think. You get $60 for the vaccine. I would have to think about it. If I had serious concerns, if I was a parent and I had serious concerns, you know, I don't know what sort of reaction or what have you, if I was, you know, a pregnant mom, if just whatever reasons that I had, you know, I don't know that I'm trusting this vaccine, or I don't know that I want to do this. $60 doesn't seem like enough to assuage my concerns. I don't know. Or a vacation day, like one, like if it was a week, month, something like that, maybe I'd have to reconsider. But that's not a very high threshold for me to change my views. But we'll see if your workplace were to incentivize it, and how much of an incentive would it require for you to seriously think, like, maybe this is something I should do. Like, that's, wow, that's pretty, you know, what a trade-off there. Like, wow, we get a month of vacation time? Like, what would it take to, you know, kind of make you seriously consider this as a proposition? Next, so I taught yoga today. It was awesome. Teaching for a while. Teaching on Zoom is a little different than teaching in person. I mean, it's still just teaching yoga, but it's a little different. I guess folks who, if you're doing a meeting, same people that you talk to in the office, it's a little different doing it via Zoom. But enjoyable, sharing yoga, that's grand. I had a moment, Jeff Toobin almost. So it's morning yoga. I practice lots of morning yoga. I've taught morning yoga, so I'm very familiar But this is, even for me, I think pretty early, because they, most of these folks are like on the East Coast, I think. So they're, I think, normally getting up at like 8 or 9 o'clock to practice yoga, which is great. You know, that's awesome. I don't even consider that, you know, like early morning. That's like regular morning or mid morning yoga for me. When I think early morning yoga, I think like 6, 7 o'clock. That's early morning yoga. And, but since they're on the East Coast, for them to practice at 8, that's 5 for me. So thankfully, we scooted this down to 9 a.m. for them, which is still 6 a.m. for me. So I'm up, ready to roll, same thing. You know, you're ready to roll early and all of that. So I have the tab, not the Zoom application, just have the tab ready. Doesn't start until 6, and I'm dressed. It's super early here in Washington State. It is dark until, I mean, it's almost March, so it's better now. But generally in the wintertime, it's dark until 8 o'clock, close to. If it's overcast and rainy like it is today, oof, it's dark until a little after 8 o'clock in the wintertime. Although it's getting better now, so it's getting light a little bit earlier, like 7:30-ish, that sort of thing. But I mean, it is not the sunniest place in the wintertime in the Pacific Northwest. So we're up. I'm trying to get myself rolling, a little groggy. I'm halfway dressed and I don't really like my clothes. I have a moment of vanity. I'm, you know, victim of racism, a person. But I don't like my clothes, and I try to do anything I can to be in better spirits, especially if it's going to be that early, like 6 a.m., like anything to be in a chipper mood. I will do outside of caffeine, generally not a caffeine person. So I go to change my clothes so I can be a little bit happier about things. And I'm horrified, like, whoa, make sure the Zoom tab, like, can't have any Jeffrey Toobin moments. And, you know, like, the session hadn't started. I'm up early. Go and switch out so I can have on my clothes and feel happy about things to teach at 6 a.m. But, wow, I mean, just little things like that. There would never be a moment where it's, whoa, let me make sure I'm not, you know, having a Jeffrey Toobin moment in front of my students. If we're teaching in class, I would have changed my clothes at home or wherever. I wouldn't have to, you know, be double checking and whoa, is the camera on and that type of thing. Like those Zooms, like I can easily see how you could end up having a whoops if you forget. Like if anything, it just, you should really be careful, codified about Zoom. I would hope most people would have a profession where you wouldn't have to be changing into clothes or workout gear, what have you, for your Zoom session. So you can just stick to whatever your normal attire is. But I would definitely be codified to make sure you don't have slips. Don't have slips in terms of things that you have in the background that you might not want to display. Whatever attire you're wearing, you don't want to have your I Love Nat Turner shirt. Maybe is not the best, you know, piece of clothing to wear for the Zoom call. Just something to think about, making sure that we're not getting too comfortable if we've been Zooming for a year now. Let's see. Next, the reports. Sorry, I asked about incentivizing. They had the segment on the NFL, talk about tacky, talk about conflation, and weaving in white women to their whole narrative of, wow, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the most diverse staff in the NFL, and they've had this problem for years, and they've had the silly Rooney rule and all this other nonsense, to pretend that we're going to try to hire some black coaches. Can't do that, but we can get white women referees and white women strength coaches and white women assistant coaches to come out in the NFL and white women broadcasters and all the rest of it. But can't exactly hire some of the very black males who played this game, might, you know a thing or two about coaching and the NFL. Can't seem to get them hired in ownership executive positions at all. I told you the Super Bowl, they did so much pretending and racial showcasing. I told you they should have just got Colin Kaepernick and wheeled him out on a knee to bring out the Super Bowl trophy and make him honorary commissioner for the day. Like, black people are in charge of Florida and they run the NFL. Black people and women, white women generally. And that came up twice. That was in the very next segment, that conflation, where it's seeming like they might be talking about racism, even though they'll use words like diversity and inclusion, and then they'll veer off to women, white women, women, the she session. Now, that term coined reportedly by C. Nicole Mason, who is a black female victim of racism. And importantly, she was talking to my BFF, Amy Goodman, talking to her. Dr. Mason kept saying that it was non-white females who were bearing the brunt of this she session in losing jobs and having to make decisions between childcare and assisting when children are schools are closed and all of that, and helping them, you know, get their academic plan together and the rest of it, having to make those type of choices and being in service industries that have been greatly impacted by the shutdowns and corona restrictions. She even said specifically that in the month of December, non-white females were the totality of all the job losses in the month of December. We have had guests and listeners point out repeatedly that right there is one of the ways that white supremacy racism is practiced, for white women to even claim and allege sexism. Sometimes all they're doing is stealing data from how non-white females are mistreated and then applying that to white women and just lumping it all together and say, oh, woe is us, poor women, poor us. Oh, it's been so hard, it's been so tough on us. Marsha Clark and Ruth Bader Ginsburg and all of us, it's been so hard. Get out of here. Tacky Amy, good, throw her in there too. No affirmative action like white women. BFF Amy Goodman, she follows Dr. Mason, who said only non-white females lose jobs in December 2020. She follows the, yes, women bearing the brunt. Doesn't come back and say non-white females or the tacky female people of color or any. Women. Like I said, if you just want to say that, you should just say white women. Make it plain, because that's what you're doing. You're obfuscating the total racist component to this that she had just highlighted, to come back and just keep putting in the rubric of women, women, women. White women have done fine in the midst of all of this. Storm the Capitol and everything. Next, we had there were two reports from France 24. The first one, they talked about the lawsuit in New York against Amazon for failure to protect employees. I know we've had a number of reports on alleged misconduct by Amazon over the last year. I mean, really even before that, but particularly the last year, because there's been such an explosion in e-commerce. Not that it wasn't there before, but just there's so many restrictions and things. People have been doing lots of buying from home and no contact and all the rest of it. So it's just been a huge increase in volume for a lot of online competitors like Amazon. Jeff Bezos and company have cleaned up over the past year. And a lot of folks have alleged, hey, they are not looking out for non-white people. And that is another one, the racist component. Lots of non-white people working in those warehouses, sacrificing their safety. We've had tons of reports, even some of the union efforts and what have you. Black people losing their job, being fired. We've had folks who, as I said, we've got Cal's listeners who've worked at Amazon who talked about, got these quotas. You don't have time to go to the bathroom. You don't have time to breathe. Orders, orders, orders. Let's go, let's go. And the automation is speeded up so it's even faster, and people getting injuries and being reckless. All of that. And then in addition to COVID, they were talking about, you don't have space to distance, right? You got to be all crunched in together and doing these orders fast, fast, fast. You don't have time to be worrying about, you know, get back. Did you wash your hands? I didn't even have time to go to the bathroom. Get out of here. That type of thing. But the lawsuit in New York. Then within the same report, they were talking about McDonald's. This is France 24. They're talking about, say this consistently for years, just thinking being a black entrepreneur or a non-white entrepreneur, that will solve our problems with white supremacy racism. That is false. We had Marcia Chatelain as a guest on the program. She did an entire book about what you heard in that segment. You get a black person, you say, oh, yeah, fight against racism. That's right. We'll get you a franchise. You can hire your brothers and sisters, your mom, your uncles to come in and you all can serve up chicken nuggets and, you know, Big Macs and apple pies and all the rest of it and give diabetes and all kinds of obesity issues, food related issues to your relatives and cousins in the ghetto. Awesome. In the ghetto. In the ghetto, because you're not going to get a franchise in one of these great profitable areas. That was exactly what he was talking about in the clip. And that is the entire book franchise. Marcia Chatelain, black female. She was with us about this time last year, I think, is when her book came out, when she was a guest on The Cows. But they talked about that, how it was stark, the difference between what white franchise owners can make. And even they were accusing that McDonald's didn't even invest the same amount in black franchises. They wouldn't do the marketing campaigns and advertisement to help them be successful, in addition to putting them in dilapidated areas with a lower profit margin. Widespread. And this was rampant. This wasn't just one black person. This was widespread, and allegations that this has been going on for decades, probably not just McDonald's. Let's see. The next report, they talked about the vaccine situation, and they were talking about healthcare workers being hesitant to take the vaccine. I've seen a number of those reports. Sometimes it'll be white healthcare workers, sometimes non-white healthcare workers, sometimes it's been educators, but I've seen many of those reports about people being hesitant. That's why I asked about things to incentivize all of this, if that would change anyone's opinion. But I'm not surprised. I'm more just curious when I hear those segments talking about people who you would think would be, you know, the first one to sign up. Absolutely. Let me get the vaccine. Let me get two of them. And even some of them are still, nah, I think I'll wait a little while. Just noting it as a curiosity, not an opinion either way. Let's see. I'll try to get in one or two emails before we get to our callers. The email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. And we can share your thoughts anonymously if you either have suggestions or a problem you would like to have us comment on. First person that wrote in: working from home now through a temp agency, my manager hired a niece and a cousin. After weeks of recording time on a sheet of paper, we must record time electronically. Three non-whites had problems logging in to record their time, including me. The whites, including the niece and a cousin, nepotism, were able to log in their time without any issues. We have until Friday to get it right. Hopefully in the morning, the system will allow us, the non-whites, to record our time. Those type of I think one screenshots to get as much data or evidence, especially if it's a widespread problem, to get people to get as much information in terms of screenshots, date, timestamp, everything. I would try to email everything immediately so you can see exactly where the problem is happening. If it's a login issue or if the screen is crashing, whatever it is, try and get as much data to the IT people or whoever is in charge of correcting this as possible. So that they can, so that they can see that you are doing everything that you're supposed to do, and you're alerting them that there is a problem, and that it seems that it's not just you, that this is a widespread thing, that maybe what they call a bug in the system, racist in the system, or it could be someone deliberately, you know, horsing around and making problems. But I would document relentlessly, screenshot, and I would try and share so that you all can kind of coordinate so that you are all compiling data, lots of detailed information about the exact nature, time, date of the problem, so that, hey, they were letting us know immediately what the problem was and letting us know about their hours to do everything to correct this problem. Continuing, I'm experiencing trouble receiving my unemployment benefits, like the caller from Alabama. I contacted a lawyer. The lawyer sent a letter on my behalf to the Department of Unemployment and Workforce, which requested a reason why I have not received my benefits when documentation states that I am entitled to benefits. The letter gave the Department of Employment Workforce 10 days to respond. I never received a response, so I contacted the lawyer. The lawyer sent a demand letter. A different lawyer said that a copy of the demand letter was sent to me. I never received the letter. Like the caller from Alabama, I just went the weeks that I am due from the end of May to the end of July. Thank God I have been able to be employed from August until now. I just want what is due to me. That is all. Lots of non-white people. That was the report that we were talking about, the Joe Biden's plan to stimulus package. Is it going to be approved? And is this going to be able to help non-white people? They were talking specifically a lot about the she session in that segment. But lots of black people, lots of non-white people. That has been their report. Not that I have been chilling at home, getting furloughed, getting paid, getting compensated, and no worries. That has not been the report for many, many victims of racism. It's been lots of folks who said that they've had difficulties. It seems like it's almost been unnecessarily cumbersome in them getting access to assistance and in a timely manner. Even when they qualified, they filled out all the paperwork. Sometimes you don't even get an excuse. As he said, they don't even respond as to, you know, why am I not getting benefits that I am owed. Let's see. Getting one more written report. Let's see. Oh my goodness, I forgot we're still in Black History Month. Let's see. Black History. I hope this didn't come for Black History Month. No, this wasn't for Black History Month. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I thought this was just like something, you know, they'll have goofiness like online. They'll have those like goofy surveys and things that'll just pop up if you go to a website, like what's your favorite television show, or, you know, can you guess and tell us the characters from Game of Thrones? Just, you know, a goofy survey type of thing. He said, the person wrote in and said that this was affiliated with their job, a survey that came out for Black History Month for the job. I'll read it as is. I can't even believe this. I won't say that. I can't believe it. But I mean, it doesn't get any better than tacky. That's why I said the whole month. Hopefully folks have made it through February safely. We're almost at March. Just hang in there. We got about 10 days to go. We will make. And four of those are weekends. So maybe that'll, you know, we're halfway through. We're halfway through. We really just got 1 week smooth sailing. It'll be March and we'll be all done with this goofiness. So the survey that was handed out apparently in the workplace. In honor of Black History Month, who is your favorite TV mom? Number one. Oh, my God. Look at how many choices. Come on. Number one, Aunt Viv, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Number two, Beth Pearson, This Is Us. Number three, Blanca Rodriguez, Evangelista, Pose. Number four, Cookie Lyons, Empire. Number five, Florida Evans, Good Times. Number six, Harriet Winslow, Family Matters. Number seven, Rainbow Johnson, Blackish. Number eight, Tasha Mack, The Game. Woo. Oh, and then FYI, the company gave a reflection day off. A reflection day off in August due to racism from the past summer. Maybe they took that reflection day off to see how many black moms they could think of from television shows. Why didn't Felicia Rashad, The Cosby Show, did Bill Cosby besmirch
Felicia Rashad in The Cosby Show. I thought, you know, she's one of the beloved moms. No, they couldn't exhaust their memory of the most beloved black moms on television of all times. Does not get any better than tacky. I hope no one out there has had to be roped in, because they'll do that sometimes. We're trying to come up with the Negro History Month survey, and we need your participation. Can you please come in and tell us some of your thoughts? We got our survey half here. Give us your, I hope none of our listeners have had to, you know, waste their time and insight on any of these committees, or sometimes they'll just ask you to come and be in the audience. They'll make this survey like a game show, and you'll have to come and spend your lunch hour participating. Man, get out of that stuff if you can. I've talked about that before, but this is about what you can expect. Fried chicken and watermelon buffet, maybe a tap dance routine. That's what it's going to be at that. Or I think we even had one internationally. We'll have a twerk session. We think that accurately reflects the talents and ambitions of the Negro. We'll do twerking for 15 minutes, and then we'll do a breakout session. Negro History Month. The number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943. Pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The email untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, we can read your commentary or suggestions anonymously. We have more emails. We'll make an effort to get through them. Again, the question, so if your job were to incentivize the vaccine, maybe it's 4 hours, maybe it's 40 hours, because they might do that. You know, you'll get 1 week worth of paycheck. It could even be, if they were to incentivize, would that impact your thoughts about the vaccine? And would it change if that incentive, you know, went up? You know, if it got pretty substantial, would that have an impact? Or no, you're solid, not going to be bought off or swayed by any, you know, trinkets from your employer. *61 for folks who have commentary. First few folks who chimed in, if you have thoughts, situation you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hi, Gus.
Greetings be in Toronto. Hope you are warm, safe, have water.
Thank you. Greetings to you, Gus, callers and listeners, and wishing same for you, as well as callers and listeners as well. So, I have a couple of quick reports. The first one is that yesterday, as I was commuting from work to home, I noticed something very odd that was occurring. The driver behind me seemed to lift her phone. It was a white female that was driving behind me, seemed to lift her phone in my car's direction and then put it down quickly as the light turned green. And I could see from the rearview mirror that she had done this two times and thought it was really odd. So when I turned down the street, I noticed that she turned down the street as well. That really alerted me. So I decided to take a different way, and then she eventually veered off. But I also made sure that I took, I made a written report for myself, as to the occurrence. And I started looking into it on the internet to see if this is the regular occurrence and what to do about it. And apparently it's a regular occurrence, that there are people that will, I can only suspect that she was perhaps taking a picture of my license plate for whatever reason, I don't know. There was no accident. We weren't close to each other. She was following behind me, so I don't understand why that would be. But apparently there's people that take pictures of other people's license plates. based on what I found in the research. It could be of multiple reasons. Of course, one, if in an accident, or two, because they the license plate is unique, or three, they're trying to intimidate, a form of intimidation. So if a driver feels that another driver has been cut off, they might take a picture of their license plate as a means to frighten the other driver. I know in my situation, I did not cut her off because she was behind me the whole time and riding in the same lane. And even when I turned, she also turned. So then I looked into being followed, and was finding that, well, apparently people get followed as well. And it could be for a multitude of reasons. So one of the things that was suggested in the research that I was looking into is if you suspect that someone is tailing your car, in order to confirm the suspicion, do a series of right turns. So if you're doing, say, four right turns, if you find that car is still tailing you, then most likely they're following you, because it's not typical for a car to, another driver to be following all your different turns. The other thing that you can do is, say, if you're going on the freeway or highway, you can get on to the freeway real quickly if you're close by there, and then get off immediately and then go back on. If you find that the car is tailing you again, then at least you'll know that you are being followed. In those situations, you can make a point to be very aware, situationally aware, and if you have a chance to see their license plate, to memorize the license plate, and then when safe to do so, stop at a place where you can immediately write it down. You could also contact the authorities, if safe to do so. The irony in that statement alone, but I digress, let them know as to the make and model of the car and the license plate of it and what's happening as well, so that they would be aware. Not much may come of it, but at least when you report it, it's on file. Similar to if you're on foot, and it reminds me of the Trayvon Martin situation where the youth was just traveling to get back home to his father's home, and there's someone tailing behind him, and I'm thinking, okay, this is even more of a reason to refresh young people on what to do if they're being followed, so that hopefully they can avoid the unfortunate demise that Trayvon Martin succumbed to by the racist soldier who killed him. One of the things that people can do in general is mix up your routine, mix up the different routes, adjust your walking pace. If you feel that or suspect that someone is following you, you can also stop periodically and make like you're looking for someone and then look directly at the person that you suspect is following you. If you find that the reaction is jittery and out of character, most likely your gut feeling is also fluttering. Most likely you're correct that this person is following you. Rather than continuing to walk the direction, say, to home or to your work, see if you can walk towards a police precinct or walk towards a convenience store and notify the authorities as to what's going on, again, if safe to do so. So just some of the ways. And if you're still feeling uncomfortable of even coming out of the convenience store, then call for someone to come in and pick you up so that you can go into the car and veer off. So that was one aspect of it. The other report is I'm looking forward to doing my first facilitation with with parents about special education. I'm really excited about it, and I have my notes together and everything, and I'm just waiting to see how it goes. So wish me luck, and that's all I have to share. Thank you so kindly. I leave the line.
Wow. Congratulations, and well, I'm sure you will be absolutely spectacular, brilliant as usual with the parents, and that's such a great investment of time and energy to help out other parents advocate for their children. Like, spectacular. I'm sure you will do great. Report back and let us know how well things go. I don't know, maybe might not be the platform, but that might be a time also to share about, you know, making sure that you are safe when out and about and are not being followed and such, as well as, you know, if you have offspring, the same thing. That is kind of scary. We have commented for some years, you know, the commute is a component of the workplace. And we've had so many people who have talked about just different things happening, whether they were taking the train to their workplace area and something happened on the train, whether we were talking about people who were driving and were having either people attacking, molesting them in the parking area where it seemed like they were coming in, like parking close to, near where an individual is parked at, and kind of doing some of the same thing, taking photographs or just staring aggressively and that sort of thing, stalking type behavior. Be very, very alert about that sort of thing. If it seems like Gavin DeBecker, the gift of fear. Now I think about O.J. Simpson every time that I think about his work in his book. Anyway, he does talk about that. If you get that feeling that something is not right and you see this person, they're, you know, whatever the situation is, you're a pedestrian, motorist, this person is behind you and they're doing something. Looks like they might be trying to get photographs of your driver's license or just you're not feeling comfortable. Excellent suggestions from B, depending on, you know, if you're in a vehicle or if you're on foot, if you can call someone, if you're on foot, to come maybe get pick you up. If it's close enough that you can get maybe an Uber or something, if you're driving, as she said, maybe getting on the freeway and then getting back off really quick or making that series of right turns to kind of assess, is this person, you know, following me the whole way through? I'm always a big advocate of getting to a public, major public outlet where it's lots of people. If it's, you know, a shopping mall or a big grocery store or something of that nature, go there where you can get on your phone and call for assistance. If you have family, relatives that you trust that, you know, they can come and be there to make sure that you're safe and help you get escorted to where you need to be. If you want to call enforcement officials, even though, you know, or whatever, but I'm always a big advocate of getting to a public, well-lit, lots of people, hopefully not just white people, but lots and lots of people, where you can go there and assess. Generally, if somebody's up to nefarious activity, they generally do not want lots and lots of witnesses to see what it is that they're doing. So I'm a big advocate of that. And distance, I think we talked about that because we've had so many people. It hasn't just been me. We've had so many people who have dialed in simultaneous with the Rona, really, at least it being a problem in the U.S., who have talked about different situations where they've been out. And it's just been random people, like they didn't, you know, it wasn't a brawl over a parking space. That's not what B described. It's been lots of people like that. Get distance. Like you do not want to. That's why I said this is not one where you want to look to engage, because you have no idea if this person is following you. If this is a stalker situation, you for sure don't know if this person is armed. Is this an enforcement officer? Do they have other individuals with them? Like, distance. Get that information, as much of it as you can, if you can get a photograph or what have you, but get distance and a safe, hopefully populated location. If you're close enough to get home, that's fine. But even with that, I have pause sometimes because you might not necessarily want this person to know where you live. So might not, it's something at least to consider. If you're close enough to get home, I know, you know, certainly getting safe, but might be something to consider if you want this person to know your physical location of your residence and all that. Maybe go someplace else get safe, get assistance, and then get home. But safety, man, for lots of reasons, safety is number one. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations, again, if your workplace incentivized the vaccine, would that change your calculus on all this, or no way? Keep your raggedy 4 hours or vacation day or whatever it is. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Bay Area mom. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings to you and the callers. Let's see. Would I take the vaccine if I got a couple of extra hours? No. And it sounds like Bill Gates is stating that we're going to need 3 shots instead of the 2. So it's still not worth it because he keeps elevating the number of shots. And since he's the one calling the shots, no. my workplace racism. So I think this is my second week working at night. So on Thursday was I blocked my Friday to where I'm not available after 2 p.m. The Black supervisor asked me, would I work with the little boy, the young guy that I have that's in class, because with him being in class, there is no ABA. There's no ABA. He's not, as soon as I get in, he's running to me to save him from the morning session. And so he only gets a little less than an hour to do anything, play or anything, until school starts back. And the only thing that's serious is school, for whatever reason. That's the only time he's forced to sit and listen. So I just wanted that to be seen by a supervisor, that it's not that I'm not doing the work. There is no, you can't do the work. He's not interested. And then the adults, the father, here's the thing. So the father tries to make him listen, but the mother comes in. What's going on? What's this? He is doing it. You don't know, because you're sitting in there working. So you don't know what he's doing. But in real life, the father will make him sit, but the mother comes in and overrides it. What is he doing? I think one of the goals is to get him to request, because he just runs the house. He has the run of the house. He does, not picking on him, but he does whatever he wants to do. It's his world at 3. So, he's doesn't want to request. So what his mom does is give him, instead of having him a set lunchtime, his snack is at class. So he'll eat his snack and they'll ask him something. He's me, you know, so he's one by one, look, reach for his drink. So what one of the instructors on Zoom suggested is for him to request whatever the snack is. So now he'll hold the bowl or whatever it is, right? I'm giving you that. So the mom isn't much help in that concern. So he's got the bowl, so I'm grabbing the bowl. And take my head off. Oh, excuse the metaphor. So he's ready to swing it all around. And so the instructor's like, was there a way you could put it in a bag instead of giving him the bowl, and she'll just pour some, because try to teach them sign language, to request on the board maybe more all done, that kind of thing. So he's not interested in doing that because he's so accustomed to everything being available at all times. So the dad's saying something to trying to get him to cooperate, and the mom just comes flying in. Well, wait, what's going on? No, well, so the instructor is saying, well, can you just put it in the sandwich bag and she can just give it to him? So, oh, okay. And so then I don't know who the dad was talking to, if he was talking to the mom or the child, because I'm looking at the screen instead of looking at them. But he said, do what you're supposed to do. So I don't know if he's talking to the mom or not. But after class, the mom had a complete attitude. She's not talking to nobody or, you know, nothing. And the little boy just runs off to go play. So that immediately leaves no ABA. And that's it. So I have a whole sheet of goals that I'm supposed to do that I can't do because the only thing that's important is class. So the supervisor asked if I would do him on Friday since there's no school. So I said I was going to block my Friday. And I said, well, I can do it. I'll do it. And I'm going to shut it off after him. Because I would like to get some work done with him, and it is not working with school. So I'm going to figure out how to switch my style a bit to assist him to the best of my ability, along with the other little girl that I have. I think they're trying to rearrange her program, but it's a black supervisor, but the grandmother isn't. I think it's hard on the grandparent, because she's the one that has to deal with her. So if the little girl doesn't get her way, it's like a screaming. She's hollering and screaming. So I think it might be stressful for the grandmother. So she just allows her just to be. And the supervisor must have called when I wasn't there and asked her, can you not let her play in the room, jump on the bed when I'm there, make sure she's not in the room, jumping on the bed, and lock the toy, make the toys, make her have to earn the toys versus everything being accessible. So it happened for one day, and the grandmother complained about that. The little girl was a little stressed out, and then that was it. So, but now I don't comply to the little girl. I'm kind of, you know, we got to do these goals or not, but I don't do. I'm not going to read the book 50,000 times and not just going to do, you're not going to run me the way you run the house. So I kind of pulled back a bit. And I think the grandmother got a little antsy, but I told her she has too much control and I'm about to pull it back. And the grandmother said, well, yeah, she does have a lot of control. I said, yeah, I can tell. And I'm going to pull it back. At least while I'm here, you guys can do what you want when I'm not here, but she's not going to be able to just run me around the house. And I didn't get a response, even though the supervisor said, carbon copy me your block off request. So I'll have that as proof. I got a response saying they received it, but they didn't let me know that they did it. But I'm still closed at 2, and I will not be taking any more nights. As a matter of fact, I'm only going to do the 3 days instead of 4 days at night, because it's not that serious. And I'll mute my line, and thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged, our Bay Area mom. I guess for most people, we're undermined, like, in trying to successfully complete our jobs, get our work done and things. We're undermined by people that we work with. Sometimes it's direct acts of racism. Sometimes we have non-white people who are not, you know, helpful in getting things done in the best manner in the workplace. That happens too. But man, like, this seems like to have parents who are not exactly helpful in getting things done. And it seems like that comes up repeatedly, where you're coming in and trying to provide services for children in need, and the parents are totally undermining. Like, they got other priorities. They're not, it doesn't even seem like this is a major priority. Like, yes, what can we do to help out, you know, Bay Area mom? Like, tell me anything that I can do to help my child, and I want the best for, like, it just does not seem like that sort of thing at all. Like, oh, let's just dump the child off on them. I got, you know, other things to do, blah, blah, blah. And they're not going along with the plan. Like, this 3-year-old is running the house and just doing, you know, whatever it is that they want. Like, no structure. Not going to try and help this child develop, get their language together so that they can communicate more effectively. No, we're not doing. The work environment in general, same thing. I just feel like those type of jobs, I feel like, can be the worst because it can totally kill your motivation. And here it's like, she's told us before, you have, you know, coworkers who are lame and who are not helping you, you know, do your best and are trying to dump all these lame schedules on you and stuff. And again, black self-respect for saying no. Talked about that last week, too. But when you're in an environment where everyone is kind of sabotaging you directly, indirectly, whether they mean to, whether they don't. But the bottom line, no one around you is helping to create an environment where you can flourish, where your career can flourish, where you can even forget all that. Like, that's asking a lot, right? You all aren't even making it so that I can just do a mediocre job at my duties. Like, you all are undermining that. Like, I'm not even trying to be great at my, even if I just want to do an average job, you all have undermined that too. Like, those type of work environments, I would be mindful of, like, any place where, like, it's just, you can already see it's going to be totally impossible for me to even be mediocre here. Like, I don't need to be here too long. Allow my career to suffer, because that sort of thing can wane on your drive and mood. I mean, how could it not? How would you be motivated to get up and do this every day when the parents undermine? She says, well, you know, we're going to try and have some structure for the time that I'm here. If you want to let this 3-year-old run the house and do whatever after I'm gone, that's on you. Which is, I mean, that's totally undermining everything that I'm done. Like, why wouldn't it be you're going to try and continue this? Don't you want your child to grow up? And nah. Whew. Hopefully, Bay Area mom, she can get better situation, not have to continue tolerating all the nonsense, sending constructive energy and better prospects. Let's see, the number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I just said, well, I've been saying for a while, but we just talked about it on the program this past Tuesday with a white woman, no less. White people do not care about children. Seem to be more corroboration. Make sure I get some of our other emails as well. Black History Month 2021. I hope we survive. Black History Month 2021. I hope we survive. Let's see. Victim wrote in. About 2 weeks ago, I wrote about my manager micromanaging me based off of nothing. What we have to do is call and interview cases. If the case hangs up in your face, you just mark it down as a refusal. So I had a case who did exactly that. After asking for him, I documented what happened and marked it as a refusal. So my manager goes through my notes and gets another employee to undo what I did and give the case a call because she says we can't go by my notes. She essentially says to another employee, my documentation isn't reliable and may not have happened. So the employee calls this person and the same exact thing happens to her. So my manager comes back and tells me to practically harass the person a few more times. What makes this absurd is that the case was from December, so they are no longer positive for COVID-19. They can't spread it, and also they can't get it again for 3 months, so we are pretty much calling people because the health department is backed up. There's absolutely no consequence for cases who refuse at this point, yet my manager is hounding and rushing us to call these people who, for the most part,
don't answer the phone and have no reason to at this point. So I remember my manager stating she's overly competitive and wants to look better than the other teams. Uh-oh. White people do compete with each other. That super important, and that can come even a lot of times in workplaces. They'll have little like tacky competitions. We've had some listeners who've wrote and called in talking about that over the years. Well, they'll have little tacky office competitions, and sometimes that's just more opportunities for racism, for them to come and mistreat a non-white person in the name of winning some tacky prize. Or sometimes it'll be something trivial. You get a little trophy or extra vacation day, whatever the case. But white people are competitive. They make a race out of lots of things. Competition. Let's see. So I look around and see the other teams and see what they do, and it's not nearly as aggressive as our team. They just do their job. This job is a contract job. It's due to end in May. This job is mainly for data collection of COVID-19. I check everything, pretty much everything we do, and the documentation we provide eventually goes to waste. As an example, for cases who don't live in the state, we are to transfer them, which is what happened with one of my cases. I got the info, but apparently that wasn't enough. I had to harass the case for more info simply because my manager didn't believe anything. After that's all done, the case gets transferred to the state they live in, but the ridiculous part is that every state doesn't use the same software and is considering this job is provided by agencies. Transferring a case does absolutely nothing. It just gets deleted. So you do all of that and it goes to waste. The system of white supremacy does create lots of waste. Waste of people, waste of resources, waste of time, lots of waste. I hope this makes sense because I'm literally being harassed off of someone's inability to be a manager. If you ask a question about how to handle something, you won't even get a response. She's in a competition that we don't know about, but are feeling the weight of. This whole COVID mess, from the testing, isolation, and tracking, is ridiculous and not to be trusted. I will say that I realized managers, for the most part, are selected based on anything outside of being a good manager. You can't do much, you can't answer any questions, and you don't have any protocols to go off of, yet you still spend the day disrupting the workflow based on bias and narcissism. There's that word again, pops up frequently in discussions of racism. And I'll say that is so frequent in workplaces where it's just a white person wanting to prove something or competing with a different manager down the hall or at a different location or whatever the case is. Like, that is so common. Petty vengeance and spite that people have, grievances. Oh, my God. Like, that type of thing is so common, and I would say especially with white women. Like, highlight, boldface print, underline, especially with white women. And I think she was talking about white women here, where they're going through all of this and the micromanaging and wasting time, and we got to harass people, and what is all of this for? What is all of this worth even? She's got a competition. Very, I think folks have said they have observed this in the workplace and beyond with individuals classified as white, where they make everything a competition. We're walking in the front door to the job in the morning and somehow that has become a race. Like, whoa, when did we... Was there a gun? Did they have starting blocks in the parking lot? Like, I thought we were just going in to start the workday. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks, if you have email, untiljustice@gmail.com,
untiljustice@gmail.com. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, proceed. Greetings, Emmy. Yes, ma'am. Namaste. Taught yoga this morning. I'm loving Malasana squat. When I first started yoga, that was one of my poses that I hated and hate. I think males in general, hips are not quite as open as females. That whole pregnancy thing, I think. Anyway, I'm in love with Malasana squat now. So now all of my students suffer so we can do Malasana squat at least twice. I think we got in two good Malasana squats this morning. Namaste.
I am sad that I was not able to participate, and really would love to get a good squat in. So I'm glad that your students are benefiting from your new love of the squat and deep hip openers. They might hate it now, but they'll fall in love with it soon, because so much back pain is related to tightness in the hips. And greetings to everyone on the call. I hope everyone is doing well. I am fantastic, and I'm saying that specifically because I actually affirmed myself into that, given the situation I am going to tell you about. And by affirmed, I mean I actually regained control of my emotions and decided to not let this racist, white supremacist influence how I feel and how I act, and so moving forward. So a coworker needed a shift covered Monday night, gave me a text. I said, sure, I'll cover it. And so I got the text maybe like 6 or so. What I'm trying to say is it's not super planned. So I pick up the overnight shift, and I clock in at the usual house that I work at, because I needed to log into the computer to reset my login to make sure that everything was functioning properly, something that I've been trying to do for weeks now. And the house manager, racist white female, was not helpful whatsoever at resolving. And I had to go to the person, the white male above her, who I consider to be my actual supervisor, because she's never helpful at all and has never resolved anything on my behalf. And if anything, she's just created more difficulty where it didn't have to be. So for me, she just is there. So I work my shift, clock in at the house I usually work at. She was there, the racist white supremacist supervisor, and another coworker. And I said, hey to everyone, because I'm professional like that. And then I clocked in, and the coworker was like, oh, so you're working here tonight? I said, no, I have to go to the other house. You know, such and such called out, needed someone to cover, whatnot. So I left. I said, have a good night. Went, worked my shift. Clocked out in the morning. Went home. Went to sleep, because now my actual work week starts Tuesday night. I wake up to a text. I wake up around maybe like 4:30, 4:45. I wake up to a text sent around sent exactly at 2:21. And she says, you worked last night, but don't see you on schedule, ? So my intuition, which I'm so, so phenomenally grateful for, you know, that is what I thank God for over and over and over and over again, that I'm in tune enough to pick up on things that aren't explicitly said, or, you know, so I know what to do. I said, let me check my ADT, which is where our time is logged. So immediately after I saw her text, I responded. I said, yeah, I covered for such and such. I thought he let the other supervisor know. I get on my ADT and my hours are missing. I text the white male and said, hey, did such and such let you know I was working for him? He said, yeah. I said, my hours are not on ADT. He said, did you clock in? I said, yes. I gave him the hours I clocked in, and he put them back into my ADP. I took a deep breath. I decided I wasn't going to deal with this white woman. I was going to go work out. I did. I had a fantastic workout. I said, I will deal with this racist white supremacist later. Tuned into the cows, listened to that white woman with her nonsense, asked my question, got myself all ready, you know, to deal with white people.
I went to work. So around 9 o'clock, I get a text message from the female. And she says, okay, we talked. He didn't have time to add you to the schedule. By the way, you'll be in another house tonight. This is not something that is any of her concern, what house we work in. If it's a little confusing what I'm saying, that was double staff night, meaning there's more people at the facility than are necessary. Sometimes people call out and then they move staff around from other houses to make ratio in the houses. So this particular night, she's telling me I have to go to another house. That's not her call to make, because we have an overnight supervisor who makes that call. And the overnight supervisor doesn't even make that call. We, the coworkers and employees, figure out who wants to go where, because sometimes people want to go to the other house because they want to break from the children that we work with. You know, sometimes you had a bad night, you just want to go to another house, deal with someone else, or whatever it is, or get experience in another house. So I was not about to even let this woman try to micromanage something that she's never played a role in. And I'm not having it. So I said, you know, figured out what I was going to do. So I decided, and I think she wanted to send me to another house, so she didn't have to physically see me that night after she deleted my hours from my timesheet, which is a violation. Let me be very clear. That has never happened out of all of the overtime shifts that I picked up. Not to mention the timesheet was going to end that day. So if I had not caught it when I caught it, my hours wouldn't have been there, meaning it wouldn't have been overtime pay. And when they try to cut me a supplemental check, it wouldn't have been my overtime hours. And so she just, I don't know, thought maybe I just wasn't going to do what I did. But again, I thank God every day, you know, not to make this like whatever, but thank the creator, whatever word. Yes, my intuition was on point. I decided, you know what? No, we're going to do this. So I go, I clock in at the house. I speak to everyone because I'm professional like that. I see the overnight staff that I'm going to work with. And I said, hey, they need coverage in this other house. Would you like to go? And I'm loud with it. You're not disrespectful loud, but loud enough that she can hear. I said, would you like to go? She said, hey, I went the other night. I don't really want to go. I said, that's fine. Because you don't want to go, I will go. Making it very clear, I'm not going because you told me that I need to go. This has nothing to do with you. You know what I mean? And I only have a couple more months here. We're really not about to start this. We're really not. So I need to go ahead and let you know, listen, you feel like you need to terrorize someone, I don't want to say pick someone else, but it ain't about to be me. Let me be very clear about it. So I said that. She was in her office. And I said, hey, is such a thing in her office? She was in her office. I popped my head in the office. I said, did you delete? I confronted her right in front of everyone. That way she could not, and it needed to be verbal because I needed her to understand. First of all, actually, it was an exercise in Black self-respect for me because I don't really like the verbal confrontation. Number two, it was practice. Number three, I do already have my out, so I was feeling comfortable making this type of risk. I wouldn't normally do this if I didn't have my next step already in play because, you know, this does create more problems. I'm going to go ahead and say that, like, I do not verbally talk to white people about anything I need resolved. It always stays in writing. But going into the profession that I will be going into, being able to defend myself, stand up for myself, and verbally communicate incorrect behavior as it is occurring is going to be imperative if I'm going to survive this. So everything that I look at, this is just an aside, is I'm looking at it as though it's practice for the real thing. And so I'm not taking it to heart, even though you might hear my voice like, you know, that's me building that muscle, that psychological muscle. And I'm saying this, you know, maybe people already on the call don't need it, but maybe.
Oh, you still with us, Emmy? Up. She might have gotten too rowdy, kicked her off the line, getting too rowdy with white people in the workplace. We'll look out for her on the line. The number is 720-716-7300. Oh, okay, there she is. She got too rowdy on the line. They kicked her off. We got you back, I think.
They did. They did. Because the funny thing is, my car's not even moving. Anyway, I'm saying that to say, you know, it's okay to be strategic, I think, to be strategic and to be tactful and to have plans. And if you have your next step,
I feel more comfortable exercising things I wouldn't if I didn't have my next step. And so that's why I did verbally, you know, speak to this woman. So she's in her office and I say, did you delete my hours from my timesheet? She starts fumbling because she really didn't expect me to say anything to her about it. And you could feel that the energy there. And she's like, and she keeps saying these things where, you know, where the next thing that they want you to say is, oh, it's okay. I think you all understand what I'm talking about. White people are really good about this, where you feel that impulse of like to kind of apologize to them or like make it okay. And that actually flipped out. I will confess that. And I caught it right then. I said, absolutely not. I said, it's not okay. And then before, and she said, whatever, whatever. And I said, deleting my hours worked for my timesheet is not going to work. And then I said, good night, ladies, because it was a room full of women. And I said it in front of everyone, and I left. I had the conversation in front of everyone so she could not go back and say that Emmy was aggressive or hostile or anything. That night, I wrote an email as per our conversation. You indicated that you deleted my hours, and I put it, you know, as it was in writing. The reason I did that was so when she responds to the email, she has confirmed that she, in fact, did what she did. Then I went to corporate HR and told them that this woman deleted my hours. She even tried to say she doesn't remember seeing me, but we spoke, you know? So it's like, it's all I know is you saw me, you knew I was picking up an overtime shift, and you deleted my hours. Now I cannot trust you at all, and I feel as though you've probably been altering my hours. So, of course, going forward, I have to develop a code. Yes, I'm doing the screenshots after every shift, and then I approve my timesheet and go forth and all that. HR responded and said, although that's not the best practice, that, you know, she can delete hours from ADP, which doesn't make sense to me at all. And she said that she would try to implement like new training or whatever it is like that. And so going back, I'm pretty sure you all don't remember, but I also verbally, at the time I called it chin check, but she tried to lie. And I said, no, that's not true. You didn't support the incident report writing, and I continued to do so despite that. I think that what she's doing now is a fallout from that. Again, I have to say that when I did that, I did know that there was a potential that it would create more problems. And I know doing this, there's a potential that it would create more problems. I am doing it because it's helping me to exercise that muscle. But what I'm so amazed at is how easy it was for her to go and try to delete my actual money and essentially turn that night into like a slave shift, where I don't get paid for it. And so I wanted to share that because there's just so many lessons in it. But what I will do and what I did do for my mental health is I still worked out. I affirmed. I feel fantastic. And when I go in there, I will remain 100% professional. I will still speak to everyone. And the one thing that I will make sure is that we are not ever going to have a verbal conversation that is not recorded, although in the state of Virginia, I think it's a two-party consent. I think she has to know. But that way, when I go to write my email, as per our conversation, I can quote directly what was said. I will also state that given the dynamic, anything that needs to be said is best to be put in writing. And I will leave it at that. Anything after that, if she tries to chase me around the house and talk to me or whatever, that is definitely creating a hostile work environment, which I put in the email to HR. I also use Mr. Fuller's language of subversive activity. I didn't expect for anything actually to happen, but it is documented. And no one else was CC'd on that, but that's if she continues to do things like this, I will be documenting it and sending it to HR and building up that report on her, because we're not going to terrorize Emmy over whatever. So I was it was kind of interesting how many other times on this particular call micromanaging came up, someone messing with hours came up, someone messing with benefits came up, and it made me think of the metaphor of Voltron. I think that's the right one, where they like all come together and form like a mega thing, but then also that collective consciousness, because I mean, unless there's like a white forum where they all get together and say, this is what we're going to do this week, it's fascinating how the same things occur so often around the same time. And white women really are the perpetrators of it. And I do maintain that there is a collective conscience with white people on what they're going to do and how they're going to terrorize. But she will not get me. I will say this as a psychological thing. You can experience the same stressor. The perception you have on that stressor will influence how your body and your mind respond to that stressor. So this can happen, and I can get all worked up and get stressed out and get angry and not work out and eat junk food and go down the spiral and start being stressed out about this white woman and what she's doing. Or I can look at this and I can say, this is an opportunity for me to learn from it, to grow from it, to get better from it, and to get that practice so that I can exercise that muscle and get stronger. The same situation but a different perception or perspective will alter how your brain and your mind reacts to that situation. So I just hope that, you know, as you deal with things, that how you internalize it, it's from a place of strength and empowerment. And I just say to myself, I'm in control of my feelings. I'm in control of my actions, and you will not break me. I got to go to work because I'm about to be late. So thank you all for listening.
Wowee. Quite an update from Emmy, and yes, touching on a number of the very themes that we've heard repeatedly, the micromanaging treachery of white women. We've been talking about that all week, really. Wage theft, that is a regular theme, although that is right flagrant. I'm not sure if I can recall off top, like, I can't think of too many other instances where someone just went and outright, like, deleted hours from someone's shift. Like, that is pretty gangster. And I think especially because this is one of the times where, and I think she said she was deliberately, hey, this is not going to happen. I'm going in to directly question her about this and saying, hey, I have the ability to be a bit more aggressive in my code, if you want to use that word, where I can confront her and not have to be as concerned about ramifications or if this may cause more problems or make it more challenging in the workplace, because this is a finite amount of time. This is not, you know, I'm not going to be here for 10 years. I'm not looking to plant roots in this location. And I think for several folks who have said, hey, if I find myself in a workplace situation where I don't need this job, and in fact, I don't even plan to be on this job, but a limited amount of time, I can be much more creative with my counter-racist code. I can try some things. I can experiment. And I certainly can be more assertive in questioning things, confronting things, any sort of incorrectness, injustice in the workplace. They're stealing from me, as she said, trying to create some slave shift that I just came in and worked for free. When speaking about white women earlier in this broadcast, I talked about the vindictiveness and saying that's white people in general. White men do this sort of thing too, but man, at least in my experience, white women, that is key component, that vindictiveness. Emmy had just said that she had been telling us for a while about just documenting, even if you have your recorder. She said, not legal in Virginia. It's got to be two-party consent. No problem. I just record it. That way I can have a record of the conversation. Can't use it in court or anything, but at least I have a record of what was said, and then I can do my notes and such later. Brilliant. But she said, I told this woman before, hey, we are understaffed. We're out of ratio. This is a violation of policy and procedure. And I'm going to document every time, because if something happens, I don't want to be held liable when I don't even have adequate staffing ratios. She said, this white woman, oh my gosh, well, you keep wasting all this paper for you, chopping down trees and writing all these reports, and we're not out of ratio. You know, be a problem solver. Stop being a, you know, complainer and just, you know, problem solve, take care of all of that. When she keeps writing these reports and it turns out, oh yeah, we are in violation of policy and procedure, and they end up going ahead and changing things so that they can be in compliance. This white woman to pretend that, oh yes, that's right, you did the correct thing. I'm so glad that you pointed that out so that we could make things safer for the children. Like, no, that was not your position. You tried to tell me to stop writing these reports. For a white woman, white person in general, but in particular, a white woman. Did this nigga just sass me? Did she try? Okay. Chin check. I'm going to show you chin. Let me get on here and do some deleting of these. That sort of, even if they wait, might not be the next day. Might be 6 months. Might be a year. I have seen that with racist women, racist men, and particularly in the workplace, even with other white people. I've seen this with white women. They have beef and conflict with other white women in the workplace, and you end up with this, these sort of kerfuffles and spitefulness, and the treachery of white women in the workplace is amazing. I always think it's a spectacular policy, really, anytime, but especially once, no more suspect, this white person has shown, you know, their total flagrant disregard for correct behavior, for professional etiquette, that sort of thing. We're just going to communicate via email. We're not going to do verbal. It's not going to be any dispute about what you said or my response or anything like that. It's all going to be written. That way we have the immediate electronic documentation. I'll wrap all that up. Composure is so critical. I've said that for years. You know, we all have different views about counter-racist code, and that's supposed to be. You know, we have different brain computers, we have different experiences, but one component that we should have unanimous agreement, your composure. When these type of things happen, and I mean, man, you go in and your hours have been deleted, that is something to be upset about. That said, even then, you don't want to come in and, what the hell, and cursing and all that. Even then, I am in control. I have a plan about what I am going to do. And it is not just yelling, cursing. She emphasized, I'm going to be professional. I'm going to be professional. I'm definitely going to let her know that this is, you know, this is not going down in this manner, but I'm going to be professional. Very important in a workplace, because these type of situations, they'll try to, oh my goodness, a mistake may have been made, but you were such a savage. You know, she came in and she was loud and intimidating and snarl. Remember the way they talked about O.J. Simpson and all of that? She had a vein popping out of her forehead and she grew to about 7 feet tall. And I was so frightened and terrorized. I didn't know she was that. Very common. Very common. So it'll be like, we just made a clerical error with your hours, and it certainly didn't warrant you coming in and being unprofessional and loud and unruly with us. Like, very, very common. In my view, white people almost try to bait us into those type of responses frequently. Vindictive white women. Let's see. Getting the emails in as we go. Oh, we got a part two. So this is the same person that just wrote in. She filed. Let me see. Is this the same day that happened? Couldn't have been that bad of a day. Oh, okay. So we got one part yesterday, and then we got the follow up today. So it's just been a long week. I'm so sorry. It's been a long week for a lot of us. Part two. Today, the system shuts down, so there's not much work. So what my manager orders us to do is to look through the other people's work and find errors. But then again, there's no standard protocol. So what exactly would we be looking for? Question. The cases are past isolation, so you don't have to ask them too many questions, as they are no longer a risk. She requests we look through other people's work to see if interview and notes are lacking, like not asking a question, and if you missed asking a question, you have to call a case back. But once again, the case is past isolation, so there will be questions you don't need to ask, like, who have you been in contact with, or any information about the people they work with or go to school with, etc. There's no standard protocol, so I always check other teams to see if they are doing this, and no, they are not doing this. The other thing I noticed, even though this is virtual, she made this white woman on my team a temporary manager, but in the bigger picture, my team has turned majority black. Now, there's nothing wrong with black people working, but after 6 months,
most of the white people on the team have gotten promoted or were given the opportunity to do other roles that are much easier and less stressful. The other thing I've noticed and spoke to other black team members about is the fact that we are not college age and some are a bit older, but yet we are stuck in a position with white team members who just entered college. All the white people in our age demographic were able to move up and secure a less stressful role. Not by accident. Especially the all of that when you see like, wow, why is it that all of the black people are having problems logging in? The white people can log in harmlessly, effortlessly, every time. Never fails. Their hours are correct. Their hours aren't deleted mysteriously. It's just the black people have these problems. Just the black people can't get promotions and are stuck down here with the high school dropouts like Mark Furman. Got us down here and we can't get a raise. We can't get a promotion. And she kept emphasizing they got us doing the more stressful work. And I'll add, anytime you're in a work environment or a specific component of work where there's no set protocol, it's kind of a do whatever, like whoever the person in charge is, they have discretion about what's going to happen. That is an environment tailor-made, ripe for white supremacy racism. There's very little recourse. It's very difficult to kind of evaluate what's supposed to happen, to even call a you can't even really say that something's wrong because there's no standard about what is supposed to be done to say we're not doing this or we should be doing this because it hasn't been clarified. Like, vague. When you really want to dominate and have discretion and you can just make it up as you go, vague policy and procedure and or no policy and procedure is the best thing ever. That means I can do whatever I want. There is no rule. There is no protocol to check. It's what I say. 1984, some days 2 + 2 = 4. Some days 2 + 2 = 5. Some days 2 + 2 = 10. Some days 2 + 2 = 1. Whatever I say. That racist woman, racist man, love it, love it, love it, love it. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Make sure I got all of our emails in as well. Oh, it's a report. I have to share. I'll share this online. Someone shared a report with us as well about why psychological safety at work is key to preventing employee burnout. Kind of short synopsis. Creating a psychologically safe workplace requires emotionally intelligent leaders who can model specific behaviors. The signs and symptoms of burnout were already showing themselves on a daily basis. And then it just goes on. That's the short snippet. But psychological safety at work. I'd be curious to hear how they explain what that means, at least my interpretation. I have to read the report. I think for victims of racism, having correct expectations about your work environment and not going in thinking that if you work with white people, that they are your friends, they are your homies, your sisters and brothers, totally incorrect thinking. Even if you work with black people, non-white people, still would be incorrect thinking. These are not your brothers, your friends, family members, homies, none of the above. Have correct expectations in terms of things that you think could happen, should happen, likely to happen in your workplace so you're not surprised. A white person practicing racism, I should never be surprised, startled about that. In fact, I should have already been thinking about different ways that I would respond constructively to this sort of thing happening.
Not that we're not upset about it, just saying already having strategies that we thought about because, hey, I expect racism, white supremacy to happen. I expect some of the folks that I work with at some point, maybe not today, hopefully not today, but at some point, I expect someone here to mistreat me. I'm already working on my code for how I'm going to respond to that. What's the best thing to say? Best thing to do. Let's see. I'll share that report, though, see if they have any constructive suggestions as well. Let's see. Grant, we'll check out and see if other folks who are with us again. Hopefully, folks are having a uneventful, I'll put it that way, Black History Month. With regards to the workplace, if you we have any other reports about those sort of programs, measures, if there have been any Zoom, I don't know, conferences, speakers for the month, let us know. Hopefully it has been totally uneventful. No one has said a word about it. And as I said, we're almost at March, so wait till next year and deal with all this foolishness again. We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has transpired the last week or so. And then we should be here Sunday, the Global Sunday Talk on Racism. We'll check in with folks in different parts of the world. I think we should have some workplace racism updates from some of our international callers, as well as thoughts on the Rona vaccine situation and all of that. That should be Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Pacific, or excuse me, 12 noon Pacific. That'll be for neutralizing workplace racism. Looking forward, excuse me, our Global Sunday Talk on Racism, Global Sunday Talk on Racism, which should feature a component on workplace racism. But yes, that'll be next 3 days, or next 2 days at least, will be on the air. Hopefully constructive. Drop an email if you have thoughts, questions, untiljustice@gmail.com. Let's see. While folks are getting their thoughts together, there was...
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I just had something else quickly to add regarding the vaccination of what I found out. So, for instance, with the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccinations, I was advised that with the first dose, the vaccine takes at least 1 to 2 weeks for the cells to be, this is what I was told, the cells to be educated on how to identify the coronavirus. Because it's through the mRNA. And what happens is that after the 1 to 2 weeks or the 21 days or 28 days, depending on which brand, Pfizer or Moderna, then the second dose is to re-educate the cells again to identify the coronavirus as a threat. So then when I had asked the public health about why does it take Pfizer and Moderna two doses, whereas with Johnson & Johnson's Belgian chapter, their vaccine is only one dose, I was told that they weren't quite sure as to why that was. I was told that with Johnson & Johnson, their vaccine is slightly different in that it has a 60 to 80% efficacy rate. However, the way that that one works is that it's there's a DNA inside the adenovirus. And what an adenovirus is a genetically engineered, how can I put it? It's a genetically engineered virus that is supposed to be inert or unable to duplicate itself. And it's also known as adenovirus 26 or AD26.COV2.S. So then from there, it would help to have the cells identify a similar virus to the coronavirus, but not the same. And the reason why they're using these adenovirus-based vaccines is because back in July of 2020, the first adenovirus vaccine for the Ebola was deemed successful. I don't know how they had measured this. They're looking to do vaccines for adeno-based or adenovirus-based vaccines for other diseases such as HIV and Zika virus. So if this might add any additional information to helping those determine whether or not they wish to take the vaccine or not. The main difference is that the Pfizer and Moderna are mRNA vaccines, and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is more DNA-based. So something to take into consideration. I hope that was helpful. Thank you. I leave the line.
Much obliged. Be in Toronto. If we have other folks who have thoughts related to the workplace, number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Can I say something really quick, guys?
Yes, ma'am.
I walked in, and just as I told you all, she was here, and I spoke to everyone, greeted everyone, and it caught her so off guard. I just want to say, if when they try you, just always be so professional that they can't say anything about you. That way, even if you have to address something serious, you've been so professional that they can't tarnish your image. It's worked so well for me. Mr. Fuller has taught it. Other people have talked about it. I just wanted to say it because I told you all I was going to do it. And of course, you know, I'm human. So I just want to be like, and like twist my face up and just have this nasty energy, but it never works. I walked in. I was like, hey, everybody, da-da-da-da, how was the day and all that? And it's just like, oh. So they really want you to get out of character and to be nasty. Just don't let them. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you for letting me say that, guys.
Yes, ma'am. Being professional, so important, particularly because a lot of times, even when there has not been an issue, like we have not batted an eyebrow, everything has been peachy keen, and we still get accused of being aggressive and intimidating and all the rest of it. So absolutely, I'm a massive advocate of professional and speak. We talked about that before, too. Speaking, speak to everyone morning, afternoon, evening, that sort of thing. Just be and being known for that so that it can't be an, oh my goodness, you know, he's just, he or she is just, you know, silent, ignores us all, you know, doesn't speak to anyone. It's just glum and mute every time that they come in the building. Like, you do not want that one either. But just, as I said, being able to maintain your composure, critical component of counter-racism, even when you have been mistreated, or I would say particularly once you have been mistreated, when they're trying to do things to get you riled up, having control of your emotions, not letting your emotions or your justified disgust with the situation, not letting that impair or derail your logical counter-racist response to the incident. That's what you want. That's what you want them to be the ones who are exactly. That's what you want. I'm just working my plan and working to get my hours back that they stole. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, observations to share, line should be open. Proceed. Folks are getting their thoughts together or getting their notes together. That is fine. I said we should be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in Sunday, Global Sunday talk on racism. We should have a program right smack dab in the middle of next week. The continuation of Black History Month. We'll have more details on that tomorrow. Once we get here for the compensatory call-in, I will double-check the email to make sure we did not miss. Hopefully, we did not just have spectators. I think we got one person who responded to our question about if they did incentivize the Rona, if that would change their response and what have you. But hopefully, folks are staying safe. I know we had a huge swath of the U.S. where they have had snow and all kinds of irregular cold weather and precipitation. So I hope folks in those regions are warm, have supplies like amply stocked, have electricity. Guess I should have said that first, and are just biding your time until things warm back up. Hopefully very soon, if not, you know, today, soon, tomorrow morning, whatever it is. But I hope folks have been safe and not compelled to being out and doing reckless things like having to drive out in the snow if you're not experienced with all of that and don't have proper equipment or slog through the ice and snow for anything. Like, man, it has been rough week just seeing some of the seeing the images and video from what's happening down in the Texas region alone has been wow, because we just had, you know, all that snow and stuff here in the Seattle area, but it's gone. You know, it's been like 40 degrees since Monday, so back to normal weather. I think it even hit 50 a couple times this week, so you know, that's almost a distant memory around these parts, and we probably won't have any more snow for the rest of the year, knock on wood. But yeah, I hope folks in those other regions are staying safe and sheltering. I can repeat what I've been saying all year long: hunker down. If you don't have to be out and about, man, stay inside. If doing the virtual or what have you is possible, take advantage of that. And I guess the same thing if you are in one of those regions where, you know, you are going to be driving to work and that sort of thing, be mindful about having food and other necessary resources with you, maybe a change of clothing or other material that you might deem to be necessary, just in case. If you think it's possible that you might, you know, be go to work your shift and then it ends up being 6 inches of snow on the ground when you get ready to leave and you might end up being stuck there a little longer than you wanted, make sure you have some resources, food, that type of thing. You do not want to be snowed in your work environment, like I said last week, and you got to go and raid the snack machine, see if you can survive off of corn chips and Snickers bars for a day or a day and a half or some craziness like that. Bring food, any other materials, just, you know, try to be thinking emergency type situations, being diligent for potential problems and leaving early. I think some other folks had that brilliant idea too. If you're still going out, you have to go to a physical location and there's snow, ice, whatever it is, factor that in. You still want to be on time if you're going to drive to get to work and everything. That means if you normally leave at 7:30, that might mean leaving at 7. You normally leave at 8:45, that might mean leaving at 8:15. But whatever you need to do, still be about getting there early. I think we talked about that before. Sometimes race soldiers, that will be the excuse used to fire a non-white person. Oh, yes, we had the Great Arctic Blast 2021, and you were late to work five times. We had a foot of snow on the road. Yeah. But the rest of us, we shoveled our driveway and got here, and you got to do the same thing, that type of thing. So factor that in. If you got to get there and or making alternatives, you know, to getting to work, if that means carpooling or, you know, what have you, do not let the winter derail your plan for how you navigate your workplace. Let's see. Folks that are with us, comments here to share, they still spectating?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I was thinking about that question about the, I guess, the incentive to get extra hours, I guess. I think that's what the question was with the vaccine. I would just stick with the hours that I have now because actually the courthouse went into its new, or I guess somewhat reduced occupancy schedule around maybe March the 23rd last year. So we're approaching almost 1 year on that. And when it first started, it was 80 hours, pretty much 2 weeks of, I guess, COVID sick leave. Now, maybe around November, they took that away from us. So I never really got to use it. So some other employees did whenever they had to quarantine. So that one thing was interesting. Another report I wanted to share, some reports. A black female victim of racism. I was told that because I believe she's low on hours, PTO. So on Monday, I was informed that her son had been exposed, I guess, at a school to someone who tested positive for COVID. So that Tuesday, she was actually allowed to come in. So I'm thinking, you know, what in the world is this about? So at least like an hour after she comes in, the white woman supervisor comes in and says, well, you know, you're going to have to leave since your son has been exposed. You've been exposed to your son. So, yeah, it's just like that. You know, we did some thinking and you're just going to have to leave. It was something to that effect. And the warden was in the mail room helping sort the incoming mail I just brought in. And she sent my supervisor, the white woman, that she pedestalizes, in my opinion, says, yeah, you know, she's in the mail room, so she just forgot and she really meant to tell you. So this person that drove all the way here to work, and that's the logical thing. I thought they would have said from the get-go that, you know, you don't even need to come in here because your son's been exposed, you've been exposed. That's just logic. You have to quarantine, can't come back until you get a negative test result. So she's like, well, she's the boss. And she gets up and she leaves. So, you know, they already have a difficult time coming over there to help me. So they have it orchestrated to where the other black female has to help answer the phones when they don't even help cover for her. And they found like a slick way of, introducing that. So they had another person on the other side for her phone to theirs, but they don't physically come over there like they used to, you know, because I guess that term intimidating or hostility, you know, they may think that I'm hostile. I'm a black male, and I work around a bunch of females, right? So I even heard about my vocal projection, because there's a lot of guys that speak with, you know, a certain type of bass or whatever. But I already said this to them, that they would find this would come under scrutiny, the way that I speak. But they don't focus on what I'm saying, the message. So they're trying to find anything to discredit me. So my next one is, toward the end of that day, the supervisor, she walks up to me, you know, toward the end of the day and asks, how's everything going? And how's my day? And I said, well, it's pretty bad right now. So she replies with a metaphor. She says, well, maybe your partner in crime will be back tomorrow. People done heard that metaphor. And I done called out her metaphor. So I said, oh, yeah, this one going in the phone. Black people are criminals. So, and we work at the courthouse. So that's like a double whammy or whatever. The next one is another white woman that I think is a member of the MAGA clique. She asked me a question in a certain way, kind of similar to what the supervisor was saying, but she said it like, oh, are you having a pretty good day today, blank. So I find that interesting that she asked me a question like that, almost trying to divert me giving an answer that I want to give. It's like you forcing me to say that I'm having a pretty good day. You know, I just say I'm ready for 5 o'clock. That's how I replied. So she said, yeah, me too. We got about 2.5 hours or something like that. But I thought that was a controlling way of phrasing that question. I got three more. A black female over in the traffic area. I was doing my routes, and she used the term hot tamale. They got these, because I know you talk about name calling. I know that's part of the 10 stops, so I don't engage in this really. But, you know, I guess it's okay with her. A black female calls another black female hot tamale. So, I know who she's talking about. So I was like, yeah, she's in it. She's here. She says, well, you know, I need to call and harass her. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Where'd you get that term from? Don't you mean something else? It's like, yeah, you're right. I'm just going to call and see if I can check on her. See, so just, I wanted to say that one because she found better terminology that's not going to generate conflict in a feud. Because when you say harass, that, in my opinion, sounds like there's conflict arising. So I just made a response to that, and she changed the wording. There's a white woman that I think is one of the most skilled, but she calls herself a redneck. Southern, you know, we down here in Florida, Georgia, Confederate, okay. And she's done this for years, but I noticed recently it's kind of picked up. And somewhat I'm thinking it's somewhat constructive. Well, she'll start talking about race, right? And she says, yeah, that's just one of the most major topics. And I know, and I think about what Gus says, what you say about staying away from talking about race on the job, which I still do. And I just listen to what her views are. All right. So one of the things she went into talking about is that, and many white people will say this, if I say something that offends you or that hurts you, you have to come and tell me because I don't know. I just don't, I don't agree with that, because where do you get the kind of work, like the kind of things that she said that specifically is meant to harm and insult certain groups of people, for the most part, who are not white? You have to have gotten that from somewhere, whether it's some kind of joke or it's just the regular culture that they live and they put on display, white supremacy. And yeah, they make so-called redneck jokes about drinking beer and driving pickup trucks. But yeah, because I shared what she was saying about the dogs having the Chinese eyes. So like, where would you get that? Like, where do you get that kind of content, that kind of material? That's something that's racism. But she says, yeah, you have to let me know if I say anything that offends you. Like, you already know it's incorrect or that it's racism. So I just said, I heard, because I know Gus, she made that one of the suggestions about how to respond, and that has worked for me. I would say that, and I would just put my hand on my chin like I'm doing some thinking. And it was another one where she shared me, this is my last one, she shared with me like a story, right, where, and this is amazing because she always talking about what race somebody is, that somebody's, she's white, female, Republican, and this guy's white and male from Georgia. This person is white and male from West Virginia. So she very particular with people profile, especially race. But when it came to telling me this story, she starts saying that we had a UPS guy, because the context is she was talking about her boss, her supervisor, who's the head of the area, a white woman in her 80s, and how she doesn't like how she treats people and how she talks to people. All right. Now, she ain't say nothing about this person's racial classification. She said it was a UPS worker. She said that this guy brought boxes upstairs, right? And she said this person that's telling me this said that she heard this person being loud from the bathroom across the hall. So she comes out and she sees that this guy just places boxes on the floor that he delivered upstairs in court administration. And this white woman becomes enraged and just gets upset and starts saying, hey, I saw that. I saw what you did there. You know what? You're done. You're finished. I want to talk to your supervisor. You know, I'm going to have your job. You know, just being just totally vicious, nasty toward the guy. And this person talking to me is saying that she tried to intervene. Well, like, no, you're not going to have anyone's job. It's okay. She's saying she's talking to the guy. But I'm telling you, it sounds like this is a black person. So she still hadn't told me the race yet. So she says that she heads toward the elevator with the guy. And she says to him, just give me your boss's phone number. And he's like, no, I can call her right now on the phone. And they're talking to the boss lady, to this guy's boss or supervisor. And this white woman says, oh, don't worry about it. He just ran into a crazy woman, not a racist. That's what I connected it with. But that's the term she used, a crazy woman. So I guess this guy leaves or whatever. And this lady heads back upstairs. And the kicker is, profound part is she gets off of the elevator and goes back to her office area where this lady, her supervisor was practicing racism toward the UPS guy. And she locks the door, right? And she's like, "What? Why is this door locked?" And she tells me that the white woman locked the door because she thought the guy was going to come back up and shoot her. So she calls the bailiffs for security. And I said, wow, she was really trying to use her power that day, huh? So, you know, I said, wow, that is just outstanding. But I wasn't surprised because it sounds like they were, she was talking about a black male. Okay, so that's the conclusion I came to with that. And so, yeah, so I think she did that also. Once again, trying to bring up issues of race and trying to make it seem like she was the pious, righteous, so-called anti-racist. That's against racist conduct, but she's practicing racism herself. So that's another little tactic and skill they like to put into practice. And that's all I have to share. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Wow. Reminded me, they had that white woman, I forgot her name, Bashir, that was it. She was down in Florida. She had the Florida Gator sweatshirt. And the black workers came. They were, I think, delivering a parcel at her neighbor's residence. And Miss Bashir came. I said, "You niggers, you're going to get off my property right now. Right now. Not going to tolerate it. I don't care who you tell. You're going to move right now." The Amazon workers, delivery drivers, so-called essential employees have had a really tough time the last year. I don't think those workers are part of the she session, but it has been tough for the delivery workers. Let's get a frying pan and drum on it in the morning for them. Show them how much we appreciate them, all their hard work and having to tolerate terroristic white women threatening to have them fired because they got sassy and uppity when dropping off packages. The audacity, she gets on a, what's your supervisor's name, buddy? I'm going to have your job, buddy, right now. Give me your name. She's following down. Didn't seem intimidated then at all. Like, where's security? And he might backslap me. And I know that black male doesn't tolerate no sassy talking female around him. I've seen enough court. Not at all. Like, tracked him down. And then after she's done all that, now we got to bolt up the door. And oh, I'm right. He'll come and rape us all. Let's get the bailiff. Can we get extra security? Can we call 911? Seen white women in the workplace. No one does it better. Like, terrorize, talk more trash, get people fired, vindictive, and then they start crying and have the victim. Oh, I'm so afraid. Oh, I just need, can someone escort me to my vehicle? Is it possible? They had that. They were going to make him do that. One of the white women before got afraid, said, yes, we'll see if we can maybe get him to escort her to her vehicle so she can get out safely. Yeah. Let's see. And the ignorant that tied into have that come from the same white woman saying that she's ignorant. She doesn't know when she might say or do something racist. So you have to tell me. I just remind folks, I say racism is a crime. If you think of any other crime, if someone were talking to you, have to let me know, because some days I get to robbing banks and I don't even know. I done walked off with $5,000. You have to forgive me. Some days I just get to raping children and I don't even know. I look up and, whoa, where did this 5-year-old come from? Where are your clothes at? I don't even know. You have to tell me. That's the way we should think about racism and so-called ignorant white people. Did I hear that right? That was a black victim who came in and said they were looking for this other victim and not calling them by the correct name, calling them hot tamale. And I got to harass this here black female. Was that another victim was doing this?
Yes, sir. I was walking through the traffic department. So she sits at the front counter. a pregnant black female. So she's speaking about another black female, and you know they talk with each other. I mean, I don't see them arguing with each other, nothing like that. I guess maybe that's how they communicate or whatever. But that is the term she used. And one time, the other black female was, you know, when I had, I don't know if you remember when I shared that, when a black female said she was having a boy, and the other black female was disappointed, like, oh, I thought you was having a girl. You just having another boy. So that, you know, that's the same one. And she had that term, hot tamale. I said, oh, Miss Hot Tamale is here. The other black female saying, do the baby mama dance, and some things that I wouldn't encourage them to do, but I just kind of just let them just do what they do.
Not a whole lot you can do sometimes like that in the workplace. That's when I'm reminded Dr. Welsing, where she says modeling. I just try and model correct behavior and calling people by their correct name. And I do not know, or you said you do know who Hot Tamale is, but I'm not going to call her Hot Tamale. You know, her name is Jennifer or whatever. Ashanti, I'm going to call her, you know, call her name, not Hot Tamale. Call him by his name. Not going to participate in that. And I certainly do not go out searching out people to harass. Like, my goodness. Like, that, I mean, just something as simple as that right there. Like, we talk about it all the time. Mr. Fuller emphasizes it. I think I mentioned Dr. Wells' exam. I mean, you want to talk about black self-respect. Like, that right there just shows you the brain trashing. That's what happens when black self-respect has been annihilated. Even if it is that I'm looking for this black female, this is my friend, and I like seeing, I want to make sure that she's doing all right and her family's okay and blah, blah. Even if that's the case, it can't just be, oh, hey, where's she at? Call her by her name. I just want to make sure she's doing all right. Wow. Beautiful. Awesome. No, that's not the standard. We started off, I'm not even coming in calling you by your name, and that's typical. We start off with some sort of name. Where's that old waterhead retired fire? I'm just using him because he said, where's old melonhead retired firefighter at? Like, what? Oh, I just want to come in and beat him upside his head right quick. Like, man, it might be I had some money for him. Might be I'm just coming in to check on him. Oh, how you doing? You got your roof fixed? Blah, blah, blah. All of that. But I mean, you can hear the hostility is right there. The name calling, like, it's not, we're not even, as they say, starting off on the right foot. Not at all. The harassment is right there. And so frequently, that's the way it goes. Like, I just came in and we just continue from there with more harassment, name calling, and do some gossiping. And maybe we'll talk bad about somebody who's not even here. Try not to participate in that yourself in the workplace. That is, in fact, even he just asked, he said, harass. He said, wow, is that what you meant? Just asking a question. Like, that's why you're looking for her, to harass her? I said, well, no. I mean, just, you know, to check in on her. Oh, okay. Just checking in. I like checking in on folks. That sounds a little bit more constructive than we're just checking in to harass her. Like, I'm sure that's what we want to be doing in our second trimester, harassing other black people. Like, man, that's, white people, racist man, racist woman, racist child are most to blame for that. But I mean, woof, that is the environment in which we live. And that's why I said you can't go into the workplace thinking that just because I work with other black people, other non-white people, that it's going to be a wonderful, pleasant place. That's not the case at all. Let's see. Partner in crime, the language they use so many. That's why tomorrow it's no metaphors, but the little slick jabs when they come in and talking to you. Oh, how you doing? You're having a great day, aren't you? Oh, no. Oh, you're a little partner in rape and pillaging and crime and drug trafficking will be back tomorrow, so you'll be better then. Yes, that's why I'm sad. My other gangbangers are not here for us to go out and do some raping and pillaging. Yes, that has ruined my day. Like, and it's that sort of thing all the time. They use the, I think he said they gave another metaphor. We're like, see, now if you were a rapist, see, and a criminal. Like, what? Wait a minute. Why does that have to be the metaphor? I got to be some man all the time. Just be mindful. Be mindful of how we get spoken about. Even in jest, they'll say, oh, I was just playing, you know, it's just figure of speech, you know, as they say. And then that's right there. See, those are the metaphors. Your partner in crime and you're some sort of criminal gangbanger. I got to shank you. Remember that one. And then it's intimidating. You know, he's aggressive, loud, ferocious. I'd said that earlier. That's why you got to be professional, control of your emotions, because that accusation is like par for the course. That's, you don't have to do, you could come in and you yourself could be offering a bag of half-eaten peanut M&Ms and all the rest of it. And then, oh my Lord, he was so aggressive. I thought he was going to beat me over the head with the candy. I didn't know what was going on. He was so loud, so much bass in his voice and resonance. Oh, the hallways shake every time he comes in. My goodness. Allison Manswell, she was on the program 2016. She said that is so common for black males, that sort of charge, that accusation, they're aggressive and hostile. She said it's so common that she would normally tell people when she does consulting for the workplace, put some bass in your voice, you know, stand up tall, have that great posture, you know, look people in the eye. She said, don't do that if you're a black male. You're about to be accused of a rapist. speak a little bit softer. Try not to stand too close to people so they don't think you're standing over them. She spent about 10, 15 minutes. She said, I feel kind of bad because it almost feels like I'm having to tell black males specifically to emasculate themselves because this is so common, but this is what I do. Allison Manswell in the archives. Let's see. We got now the Rona protocol. Now, see, we talked about that before. Now, to have a black mom, she has offspring. There's some report maybe her child or a family member, you know, maybe had the virus or what have you, as opposed to we got a set policy, bam, this is what it is, and then making sure she knows the policy so that she doesn't come in, contribute to contamination, us being a super spreader. She comes in and now it's, we don't need you in here today. Wasting time and energy. We're in the age where they got text messages. You got people doing unjust networking all day long. We couldn't have said a text message, even at minimum, if she is having problems with her offspring, hey, I could have been at home making sure he is safe, not having to. I'm sure that was probably some sort of coordination to make sure he's going to be taken care of and things are going to be straight for the next few hours while I'm away and I got to get dressed and drive into work, and to waste all that time and energy for something that they could have shared with her way. And in fact, everybody should know that policy. Like, even if it's, you know, even beyond her for the moment, like for the safety of everyone there, yes, let's make sure that we're not having people come in to contaminate us. So we all know the policy. If you're at risk, we've done our contact tracing. And if we think there might be a risk, stay at home. Everyone should know that. Apparently, that policy hasn't even been distributed in an effective manner. And or this could be another act of racism of them just, you know, messing over a black person's schedule and have them waste their time to come in, and then, oh, we don't even need you, sorry, you can go home. Either way is neither is acceptable. Even if it's just about health and safety, we should do a much better job disseminating the policy and procedure around if there is a risk, when you need to stay away, when it's acceptable to come in, just for overall health and safety in the building at minimum. Man, always a smorgasbord of so many things to pick from happening at the down at the courthouse. My goodness. just be alert. Keep your pen handy, I guess. Like, wow, seems like somebody, non-white people, white people all the time. That and be professional. That might be a big theme for today. Be professional, even with other non-white people. Be professional. Call people by their proper names. Do not participate in the nicknames and all of that. Call people, even if it's a black person and you all have known each other since kindergarten and you know every nickname that they've had for the past 25 years. Fine. Do that on your free time when you're at work. You can even put the Mr. in there. Mr. Johnson. Yes, I know you were Tadpole back in third grade, but you will be Mr. Johnson every day while we're here. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Did we nab all of the folks' commentary, observations for workplace racism for today? We have like last minute or two in the broadcast.
Gus, just to answer your question about incentives, the only incentive that would make me get the vaccine is job loss. I don't think there's a certain amount of money. I mean, unless you like just doubled my salary and then it was like I worked a whole year for not having to work a whole year. I got paid for a whole year not working. But that's the only thing. I know that's going to come for me at some point, but there's no like day off or 4 hours or even a week or a month or anything like that that would make me get the vaccine other than like termination. But I just wanted to answer your question.
Much obliged. Yeah, I don't think, at least whatever. In fact, the additional information, and I am still learning, I don't have an opinion in terms of encouraging yay or nay about the vaccine or the virus for that matter. I would tell people to, you know, investigate, come to your own informed conclusion. But I was thinking, oh, if you get the vaccine, you don't have to do all that quarantine. You can go out and frolic and all the rest of it. And then I went and looked again and they said, no, that is not the case. If you get the vaccine, you still have to wear the mask and do the quarantine and all that stuff. That does not mean you just get to go out and be willy-nilly again. I said, well, wait a minute. That would greatly reduce my enthusiasm for all of this. Like, that would be the sell. Like, oh, if you get the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask. Or at minimum, you don't have to do all this sitting in the house. You can go out and do things again, provided things are open. But that would compel me to change my mind or to think differently about all of this. But they said, nope, that is not the case. Unless I've been misinformed, they said the major benefit is that you will not be, or you are less likely to be subjected to major illness, death, major side effects from COVID-19, unless I've been misinformed. But it was not, yes, you can go out and touch everybody now and hug everybody and life is great. Like, nope. Not at all. Like, if that's not the case, then, you know, y'all are going to have to come up with a whole lot of incentives to motivate this, because it just doesn't seem like it would be that much of a payoff. But I'm not a medical professional. We'll talk about this tomorrow on the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Global Sunday Talk this Sunday, and we'll get some of our folks in different parts of the world, get their perspective on all of this. I always think that's really important because, you know, different views, global problem, help us hopefully get a more accurate, logical understanding of what to do to stay safe in the midst of chaos and confusion, and some deliberate lying about all this too. That's it. Much obliged to everyone for participating. Good luck to be in Toronto. You will do smashing job sharing all the information with the attempted parents. Let us know how it goes. Continued great success to Emmy and her med school pursuits. It will be awesome. Much obliged to all the folks who dialed in to share. Hopefully it was worthy of your Friday evening. If you are in any of the areas that have been impacted by the weather, like, oof, I hope you are warm. I hope you have water. It's so embarrassing. Like, man, I have to be saying that. Like, water. Basics. I hope the electricity either has been restored or you're not dealing with those rolling blackouts and all the rest of it. Just, man, it has been a rough, unpleasant 2021 for lots of us. But hopefully it will be a little bit warmer by the time we are on the air tomorrow evening. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We will need our brain computer operating at maximum efficiency to solve this problem. In addition to being sober, I say hunker down. We got weather problems, racism problems, Rona problems. There are many compelling reasons to stay at your residence, at least for a little while. Do something constructive, do some reading, do some studying, work on a written project, you can work on a video project, something related to counter racism. Stay safe for the time being. If you got to go out, be very aware of what's happening around you. B had that frightening story at the beginning about being stalked and just trying to get home from work. Be alert. You just, it's been so many of those type of reports. Since the Rona restarted, the Rona situation started and before, just be very mindful. And if it seems like there might be a white person, anybody really, who's in your immediate vicinity, they're stalking you, they're behaving in a hostile manner. This is not about confrontation. As I said before, I'm all about distance, getting distance from this person or people. You don't know if they are armed. You don't know if they have a whole militia with them, armed and prepared to do harm. Distance and report. If you want to call enforcement officials or whatever else, let them know. But it is, in my view, it is not safe or logical to do a lot of direct engagement. You have no idea what sort of situation you're walking into. If you are not prepared to kill and die at that very moment, exit immediately. And try to make sure you get to a safe populated area if this is a you're being followed type of a thing. With that, we're sober. If you have to leave, you are buckled, driver or passenger, you're buckled in. If you're driving, you're not on the cell phone, just doing the small things to stay as safe as we can under conditions of terrorism. Little things to stay away from the Mark Furmans of the known universe. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling. That right there, maximum act of black self-respect. I am not going to name call another black person for any reason, workplace or no. No name calling of black people. It is in the 10 stops, just one of the little small things that in my view would have a really big impact. We are not going to name call other victims of racism. No house nigger. Heard that from a white woman this week. Not calling him house nigger and all the rest of it either. That's it. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.